It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, this program is live. Why would you ask? Because I was gone yesterday. But I'm back today, as promised. Agnes and I made the run from here in the hills of Hollers of Almost Level West by Cold Trump Junior Stand Southern Variety up to the hills and hollers of Almost Level but West by Cold Trump Junior Stand Northern Variety. We went up yesterday. We spent the night. We had a lovely little evening together. And then Agnes went to the doctor this morning, where they set about the business of running a bunch of tests and trying to figure out just exactly what in the world is going on. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Brother Deacon Asa tells me we are hot on both pepperoni roll-fueled streams, and yes, that's true. We'll get into that. But Agnes is feeling much better and has a much better attitude about, and that's not to say she had a bad attitude, it's just that up there at the WVU Medical Center, they seemed, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Really, really competent. And that's a good thing around here, because it's kind of a, rare thing. But they were right on top of things, and we'll be going back probably the end of next month. But hopefully we're on the road to getting treatment that will actually make a difference for her. I certainly hope so. Lots of things to talk about. There's a bit of a trip report on board. Thank you very kindly, Darlene in Connecticut, saying welcome back, Bob. Thank you, Darlene. Hope Agnes is doing great. Hope she got good news on her health. And it's good-ish, as in not horrible. So there's some hope that she can get, like I said, adequate treatment. I'd be lying if I said that. It's a poke up there and back. There's no getting around that. But it's really pleasant to be able to go back up there and old stomping grounds and all of that stuff. And we had a blast. You ever had falafel for breakfast? It works. It's a great breakfast food, especially when served with a spicy. With some tahini and a spicy tomato sauce. But that's neither here nor there. We'll get into some of that. But the stuff that we do at the beginning of the program, thank yous. Thank yous are in order. We have to thank our subscribers. Thank you today to our pal at Shadow Mountain Graphics in Arizona. And to Joan in Talibandiana. Thank you both very kindly. And let me back up. Yesterday's subscribers. We'll get there in a minute. There we are. Thanks going out to Carl in Columbus. And how did that happen? Wait a minute. There we go. Carl in Columbus. Thank you, Carl. And thank you to Armand. Thank you, Armand, very kindly for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks as well. To Dr. John, and thanks to Vincent, and thank you to Bernice. Thank you one and all for continuing to help take care of the funding needs of keeping this little attempt at liberal, progressive, commercial-free, sort of non-capitalist broadcasting going. It is much, much appreciated. And thanks as well. I need to do some ciphering here. Thanks as well to Barbara. And thanks to Reggie. So between Barbara and Reggie then, I can happily say that the fundraising goal for this evening is down to $460. And I got some good news to go with that. Let me just keep things, try to keep things somewhat in order here. Okay, so 460, and I can tell you that there's a challenge on the table this evening, courtesy of Chris in Germany, in hopes of keeping up, getting caught up, and because, remember, program note, I'm going to be gone the first. I probably better look at the calendar again, so I don't make a mistake. I'm going to be gone the first 10 days of April. And so we'll have to deal with figuring out how that fund. And I'm going to try to be on the air some, because we've got a new road rig that'll make that hopefully much simpler. But at any rate, we've got a challenge on the table courtesy of Chris this evening of $100. So at one fell swoop, Chris will match the first $100 that come in, and that'll take us down from 460 to 260 if that can get met, during the program. So, like I said, Chris's challenge is on the table, and hopefully we'll get. If we could get down to zero this evening, that would be freaking awesome. So, yeah, $100 challenge on the table, if that's met. We get down to 260, and then maybe we can do 26 at 10 or 10 at 26 or something along those lines, and not have some sort of really terrifying, scary number for Friday on the front porch, which comes around tomorrow. Okay. Now, back to interesting things. Like I said, Morgantown was my home for a rather a long time. But unfortunately, just like many, just like the rest of West Virginia, it was kind of shocking to me. Shocking, yet at the same time not shocking. This whole state is burned up with the opioid crisis. And back in the, 6 or so years that I lived there, you walk down High Street in Morgantown and you might see somebody stumbling out of a bar, maybe somebody losing supper in a garbage can or something. College town stuff. But I saw something yesterday that I'm sorry if it makes me seem rather like a Pollyanna, but I saw somebody fixing in an alley. And rest assured, that was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. in Morgantown. Somebody was in an alley in Morgantown. A young woman had the rig on, had the needle out, and it was an ugly wake up call. I know how bad the opioid crisis is in West Virginia, but that was a level of bad that it was one of those things where you're walking around town and you're remembering things and chasing your own ghosts and whatnot. And then to see that was, wow, shocking. But like I said, we had a lovely day. Beyond that, a lovely day today, going to the doctor and bringing goodies home, because we did. I don't know if you realize this, but the favorite snack of, okay, cornbread and beans, that's more like a meal, but the favorite little snack of the state of West Virginia is something called a pepperoni roll. And it's as simple as it sounds. It's pepperoni in bread dough baked. But like all things of Zen simplicity, it can be complex and simple at the same time. You can buy them all over the state, but most of them have a ton of sugar in the bread and slices of pepperoni. But on the way home, we stopped at a little place in Fairmont called the Country Club Bakery. I put a poster, I put a photograph up on social media. Just, I'm tickled. We got a bag of a dozen pepperoni rolls, and I'm happier than a hog in a waller. Oh my goodness, because I haven't had one of those since law school, because nobody makes them like that and distributes them to, you know, convenience stores and so forth. It was wonderful. And like I said, I'm looking forward to Agnes getting something resembling appropriate treatment and begin. It's probably a process that'll involve us going back every month or so for a little while until they get things stabilized and sorted out. It was yummy. It absolutely was. But that thing last night was just weird. Just really altogether weird. And the other thing last night, we stayed at the Grand Dame Hotel of downtown Morgantown, which was, it's seen better days, but it wasn't too terribly bad. A place called the Hotel Morgan. And you always meet interesting people on the road. I happened to meet an astrophysicist from my neck of the woods in Alabama, and we talked astrophysics. Mostly he talked and I listened. It was one of those little unlooked for serendipitous a lanyap, an unlooked for goodness or something like that. But by the same token, I felt kind of weird because it was prayer meeting Wednesday, and I wasn't here. Yeah, bizarre, even. But I'm back, and it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and that's the point here. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, $460 to come even with fundraising, and total of $660 to finish off ostensibly the month of March. Hey, it's the second day of spring. Yesterday looked like the first day of spring because it was all blue sky and wonderful and almost something that would resemble warm. Today it was gray and cloudy. We got rained on a little bit on the way home, but it's still the second day of spring. So winter has been banished. It might try to reach its icy tendrils back into our world a little bit, but things are going to get progressively warmer and more wonderful. And, you know, we'll be able to get back out on the trails and hiking around and making the best of this little outdoor wonderland around here where they aren't blowing things up. Right. But again, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, oh glory, this is a real Lulu. We've got two well, there are multiple thorns, but we have two competing for the lead thorn in the side this particular Thursday. Oh, and by the way, if you're so inclined, feel free to run on over to headon.live, which is where we live on the interweb tubes, and click on the chat room icon. People are having fun posting the posting old. What are you doing, Otto? Posting old sort of never should have been made Christian record albums. It's funny, but you can only see it if you're there. And if you do pick out a screen name and a password, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Foam Cups and Heather and Otto and Squeaky and Warrior Witch, yes, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space this evening to become Man Cave, as well as pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan. Oh, God, Jesus, use me. I know, I know. Yeah, Otto, I've seen that website, too. Yeah. The Dick Handler Quartet, I Should Have Been Crucified. My, oh, my, oh, my. Yes, probably. We are off and running. We've taken things down. John just took things down to 450, so we've got 90 bucks to go on Chris's challenge. And with that 90, well, when that 90's met, you know. So hopefully John will have lots of company here in a little bit. Like I said, though, two competing stories for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Maybe we'll hold a vote at the end of it all and find out which is the thorniest of the thorns. One of them involves oh, wait, I need to share this real quick. This just came in from Tracy out in L.A. A challenge in honor of Agnes. Because my girl Agnes, a.k.a. the Viking warrior princess, here too will now forever be known as my sister from another mister, and you had to travel in order to take care of her health, I'm putting forth the following challenge to help catch up with fundraising. I hereby put forth the following $100 challenge called No One Should Have to Travel and Stay Overnight to Get Adequate Health Care. That was all in caps, but I didn't yell at you because I'm just that nice a guy. I'm glad you did enjoy the food porn portion of the trip, but the reason behind your trip all kind of sucked. It did. It did indeed. And one of the things that made it sucky is the fact that she's presently on a whopping big dose of prednisone, and it's kind of got, it's a jangle that even like a triple espresso, latte, mocha, macchiato, soy foam, yada, 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 can't even touch. It did suck. In any event, says Tracy, I love y'all too much to have you worry about fundraising. I'm glad to be in the position to be able to help. Thank you so much, Tracy. Love you more than words can express. You are forever friend in the struggle. Tracy, a.k.a. the, and we need caps here, capital G, capital N, Tracy the Grand Negress. Ah, Tracy. Thank you, dear. Thank you so very much. So that's 200 bucks in challenges. And if we can, that would mean we would raise almost all of tonight if that gets met. 200 bucks in challenges. So I'll cross my fingers and hopefully that will prove an inspiration for us to be able to get done this evening. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you. The No One Should Have to Travel and Stay Overnight to Get Adequate Health Care challenge. I couldn't agree more, but that's also what, that's kind of life in Appalachia. Maybe if the coal industry hadn't been trying to depopulate this state for about the last 40 years, things might be different. Ah, Darlene in Connecticut responds and says, consider Tracy's challenge met from the sorority of Leans with Tracy as our queen Tracy is our queen of the Oreo Society, the reverse Oreo Society. That's from Darlene in Connecticut. So, Tracy's challenge has been met. There's 90 bucks remaining on Chris's, and now we're going to get rolling on what should be a steel cage death match of a thorn in the side Thursday competition. We're going to start with Nikki Haley. You might know her better by her real name, Nimrata Haley. And you might remember her because we were one of the only programs that dedicated an entire program, or nearly an entire program, to something that happened to her back when she was our highfalutin United Nations ambassador. You know, there's this thing, this notion out there that somehow Nikki Haley was above the fray or not as greedy and grubbing and grabbing and nasty as the rest of the Trump regime. That is a, what's the word I'm looking for here? I want to be very precise. Lie. Because Nikki Haley, even though it's not Monday, is, in fact, a moron. And what a moron she is. Let's recap for a moment with Nimrata Haley. That day, back in 2017, when the Morning Zoo crew, the Moscow Morning, and that's not, that's Moscow, Russia, not Moscow, Idaho. Moscow, Idaho. When the Morning Zoo crew from Moscow called in and pretended to be the Polish Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. The Prime Minister of Poland. And you might recall that Nimrata Haley didn't have the essential brains necessary to realize that she was being had by a Russian comedy duo, ha, 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 by the name of Vovan and Lexus. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, yes, is much traffic on loop around Moscow this morning. But do not criticize, as is lucky we have cars at all, and our supreme wonderful leader, bare-chested, tiger-riding Vlad Putin, will not appreciate. Ah, ha, ha, ha. So they put the call right through, remember? I do. Yeah, it was special.
Certainly look forward to a stronger and a continue to work together relationship as we go on to the Security Council together, and certainly in any way that we can be helpful, just please feel like you can give me a call anytime and we'll be happy to push forward anything that you need.
And I would also like to discuss our Polish-Ukrainian relations with you. As you know, Ukraine is our neighbor and we often acted jointly. Poland has always supported Ukraine, and especially in the fight against Russia. The Ukrainian authorities have often asked us to vote for different resolutions in the UN, and we supported them. But not long ago, they have passed a law on the national language, which affects the rights of minorities speaking Polish, Hungarian, Romanian, and Russian. And we also have huge differences.
They are a big laugh riot. Big, big laugh riot they are, Vovan and Lexus in Mother Russia. This is because humor is different over there. Much of their comedy is visual, so it does not work out so good on the radio, which is what they are on. But nonetheless, they are laugh riot on morning drive in Mother Russia.
Turning Nazism and criminals of Bandera, and you know, as you know, Poland suffered much from Ukrainian nationalists, and Nazism glorification in Ukraine is outrageous.
Right, I understand.
and the U.S. and Ukraine.
Right, she does. She understands, yes.
We're against the resolution of Russia against the clarification of Nassim. Why did you follow Ukraine on this matter? I just would like to know.
Well, we've always, when it comes to Ukraine, we've found a strong relationship with Ukraine, and I think where we've come together with them is really in trying to push Russia back on the annexation of Crimea. So that really was the basis of what our relationship has been, is just helping them in the issues that they have with Russia. But
we're not going to rehash all of this because it's so patently ignorant, stupid, and, well, moronic. But you'll remember in that same clip, eventually it comes around to this this particular exchange. You'll know be no more?
Yes, yes.
They declared independence. They had elections, and we suppose Russians had its intervention.
Yes, of course they did. Absolutely.
And now this Binomo land makes the situation in the South China Sea even more tense.
And we're aware of that, and we've been watching that very closely, and I think we'll continue to watch that as we deal with the issues that keep coming up about the South China Sea.
Yes, that's correct. What should be done because of this Binomo?
Let me find out exactly what our stance is on that, and what, if anything, the U.S. is doing or thinks should be done, and I will report after. I will report back on to you on that as well.
Somehow or another, this idiot got a pass for this degree of test stupid. I don't know how, but she did. So that brings us to today. She's out of the administration, and she has been touted, among other things. I kid you not. You know, this is one. If I wasn't talking, I'd have the hockey puck out and be like, oh, because there are actually people.
Well, you know, she might prove a serious contender with Donald Trump for the Republican nomination in 2020 because Republican woman.
There are actually people who said that. I know. Again, no rot gut hooch around the studio, so there's no relief from the stupid. But on Wednesday, yesterday, apparently she saw a tweet coming from Bernie Sanders. That Bernie Sanders. Our Bernie Sanders. Our side's Bernie Sanders. Progressive hero Bernie Sanders. Who noted, Bernie did, in the United States, it costs on average $12,000 to have a baby. In Finland, it costs $60. We've got to end the disgrace of our profit-driven healthcare system and pass Medicare for all. Noteworthy that Pramila Jayapal, a member of the House of Representatives from Washington State and a great progressive leader in her own right, has introduced a sweeping Medicare for all bill in the House that does amazing things like includes vision care and dental care. No kidding. And so, you know, Bernie was right there on the right there where he's always been, saying that having the profit motive inside healthcare is probably not conducive to the delivery of good quality healthcare. And he cited Finland. Well, Nimrata Haley, who, to the best of my knowledge, has never actually taken a fake phone call from the Helsinki Morning Zoo crew, but give them a chance, folks. Give them a chance. She probably would. Because, just as a reminder, Nimrata Haley, Atne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I ime.
Namrata Haley was not well pleased with what Bernie Sanders said. And she responded to Bernie. Oh, wait, we've got a proposed song parody courtesy of Jimmy in the Great Northwest. Republican woman, stay away from me. Okay, no more singing, but there were musical notes by it, so I take it that Jimmy wanted me to at least try that. So, doing my best here. I won't do that to us anymore. Especially, right, not the first day back after I missed a night. That's just wrong. So, there we are. Namrata Haley, deeply aggrieved. You got to wonder if she owns stock in maybe some for-profit healthcare delivery outfit, or maybe she owns stock in some sick, twisted corner of the for-profit insurance industry where CEOs make a small fortune on the agony, sickness, illness, and death of other Americans. I mean, would you be surprised? I would not be surprised. But I guess she can be forgiven because there are just so many things Namrata Haley doesn't know. One of them is better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth, or in her case, one's Twitter, and remove all doubt. Because she ran off to the Twitter and wrote the following.
All right, Bernie Sanders, you're not the woman having the baby, so I wouldn't be out there talking about skimping on a woman when it comes to childbirth. Trust me.
Jesus, Namrata, we can't trust you with a fucking telephone and we're going to trust you on health care policy? I don't think so. Trust her. Give her credit for getting something right. Bernie Sanders is definitely not a woman having a baby. In these troubled times in the new 90 states of Merca, in Trump-Merca, there are not many things that both sides can agree upon, but by Jesus, this may be the thing that provides us with that healing moment where we close our divisions and we bond together with the better angels of our nature and acknowledge, yes, in fact, that it is true. Bernie Sanders is not a woman having a baby. Amen. Oh, it almost makes me want to fire up the national anthem. But then Donald Trump would get mad at me because, you know, I'd kneel. So that part she gets right, and you know, that's like getting 50 points for getting your name right on the ACT test. Yeah. But then the rest of it is just a hot mess.
So I wouldn't be out there talking about skimping on a woman when it comes to childbirth. Trust me. Nice try, though.
Ooh, saucer of milk for table two. Wasn't that just catty? So, the essence of what she's saying is that Finns skimp on maternal health care and prenatal health care. That's her assertion. That's what's encompassed in that tweet. She went on because, first law of holes, and she doesn't know it, there's just a lot of things in this life that Nimrata Haley doesn't know. Healthcare costs are too high. That is true. But comparing us to Finland is ridiculous. Ask them how their healthcare is. You won't like their answer. Because Nimrata Haley knows so many Finns. We have listeners. We have members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in Finland. I see the downloads. And I think it's safe to say, I probably know more Finns than Nikki Haley does, even though she was at the United Nations. Nikki Haley, presented with a globe complete with the countries of the earth on it, could no sooner find Finland on it than she could find her ass with both hands. And in some cases, that might be considered metaphorical or allegorical or perhaps simile. No, it's definitely not a simile. Definitely not a simile. In this case, it's an actual reflection of reality. Nikki, can you find your ass with both hands? And she puts her hands over, you know, she puts her hands over her ears. It's kind of a visual, but work with me. So, you know, I'll send out this, consider this an official communique to the Finnish members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. How do you like your health care? Well, most of our Finnish listeners, our Finnish members of our Horn Family Community Congregation listen via podcast because, oh God, it's what, probably 2:37 a.m. Finnish standard time right now. So I'm not gonna wait for an answer. Instead, I'm going to rely on a member of the government of Finland. Because a member of the government of Finland, in fact, the one Finn on Earth that Nimrata Haley may have actually met at some point in time, Kai Sauer, who is the Finnish ambassador to the United Nations, got on Twitter. Blah. Does that mean I was about to say Nicker? Nicker Haley? Twitty? Oh, Bob, don't get your knickers in a twist, right? Yeah. Kai Sauer responded to Nimrata Haley and did so with extreme prejudice. Damn, this had to hurt. This probably winds up hurting more than being caught out by the Moscow Morning Zoo crew. It was a multi-part tweet. Here are some facts, tweeted Kai Sauer. Finland has a high-performing health system with remarkable good quality in both primary and hospital care. The country also achieves good health status at relatively low level of health spending. Now, first of all, I have to praise this tweet because it's straightforward and factual. Secondly, I praise the tweet because Kai Sauer, the UN ambassador from Finland, tweeted that himself in English without the aid of Google Translate, because if Google Translate had been involved, it might have wound up being the directions to a beer joint in Texas. But no, it's good, it's comprehensible, it's fact-driven. And having gotten a good running start like that, Ambassador Sauer continued and said, Finland has the world's third lowest infant mortality rate, according to UN and SDG indicators. Maternal mortality is the lowest in the world in Finland. World's third lowest infant mortality rate. Ha ha, well, that's where Nimrata Haley had him. Well, see, you're third. Ah, yes, but Nimrata, the new 90 states of Merca, Trump Merca, isn't second or even number two, unless by number two you mean a colloquial meaning of the phrase number two, which it kind of is. Because we're probably not even in the top 10 in terms of the world's infant mortality rate. We know, for instance, that Cuba has a better infant and postpartum maternal mortality rate than the United States. Oh, but not satisfied with having burnt her to the ground in the first two tweets, Ambassador Zaur twisted the knife. Finland has the second lowest total mortality from cancer in EU countries. Again, the United States just watching. And then finally, posting a photo of lovely, lovely Helsinki with great billowing white clouds and cerulean blue skies in the background and a magnificent domed Capitol building and beautiful, beautiful waterfront buildings along the Baltic Sea and the bay there. Gulf of Finland, I think it's called. Ambassador Zaur finished her off.
Finish her!
Apologies for the delayed reply, but we were out celebrating our rank as the happiest country in the world. Damn. Down goes Haley. Down goes Haley. Really, Nikki, don't get back up. He'll only hit you with more of those troublesome facts. And then, oh dear God, the internet got hold of her. And it was brutal. For instance, life expectancy in Finland, 81.4 years. U.S., 78.7, and falling. Hey, thank you, mountaintop removal. Thank you, destruction of life expectancy in Appalachia. The folks in McDowell County are particularly tickled, I'm sure, with Nikki Haley. We are, the Finnish maternal death rate is 3 in 100,000 live births. Ow, the U.S. maternal, and you know, this is a national shame. This should be something that has us as Americans walking around with our little heads in our hands going, you know, we need to do something about this. Out of every 100,000 live births in Finland, three women, sadly, die. Out of every 100,000 live births in the United States, 26 American women die. Jesus. And by the way, that maternal mortality rate, let's look into the top 10. Let's start with three. Finland, four. Sweden, Italy, five. Czech Republic, six. Austria, seven. Switzerland, eight. Spain, nine. Norway, 10. Japan, 11. Israel, where we pay for the healthcare, by the way, 12. Slovakia, 13. Germany, 14. Denmark, 15. Australia, 16. Be proud. Be proud, Oz. The Netherlands, 17. Canada, 18. Belgium, 19. Ireland, 20. Damn. We're 29th. We're 29th. We're 29th. USA. 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 Trump. 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 Hey, maybe with just a little bit more Making America Great Again, we can get behind Mexico and Chile and Hungary. Never, never give up on the ability of maggots to make America worser. Maw. Make America worser. Maw. So that's nominee number one. Steve in New York says, wait, what? Bernie is not a woman having a baby? Does that mean he's not a woman at all, or he's just not a woman having a baby, or as we saw in the epic classic The Rabbit Test, a man having a baby? Wait a minute. Cowbell to Steve in New York for remembering that utterly forgettable Billy Crystal, not a classic. Mm-hmm. There was another tweet that said, and Flavio quotes it up in the lovely land of La Crosse. Imagine you were as dumb as Nikki Haley thinks we are. Flavio adds editorially, I can't. I already suffer from migraines. Yes. Earther, by the way, went ahead and went to work on Jimmy in the Great Northwest's lyric, Republican Woman. He said, damn it, Jimmy stole my bit. I started typing first, I swear. Damn two-finger phoning keyboard. By the way, it was written by Alex Jones, says Arthur. Republican woman, stay away from me. Go back in the kitchen, cook a roast for me. Yeah, that's pretty Republican of you, Arthur. Yeah, I think that's worth a little jingle. But we're taking you at your word that you were thinking even as Jimmy was typing. So, you know, it's a trust issue. But that's the first nominee. The second nominee is the monumentally stupid governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky Stan. That, of course, would be Matt Bevins. Yes, Matt, or as we call him, Matt, decided to enter the great vaccination debate today. Now, the fact that the United States has a great vaccination debate is a thorn in the side all by itself. There's almost nowhere else in the world where there's a debate about whether or not there's nowhere else in the world about whether the vaccines are a good thing. But here in America, where roughly 32% of the people, if told by Donald Trump to drop a cinder block on their foot, would ask why they couldn't drop two, well, we have a vaccine debate. Teach the controversy. See what happens when these little white-wing diseases spread? You know, education and knowledge is a vaccine, too. It's a vaccine against being a Republican or a maggot or both. But way back when, another guy who's in Kentucky, Stan, who runs the ARC Encounter public treasury grift, a guy, and we're still trying to figure out a way to deport him back to Oz, named Ken Ham, got a bunch of Kentucky money to build a theme park that shows that Adam and Eve lived. No, well, that's the Creation Museum that shows Adam and Eve picnicking with little vegetarian tyrannosaurs frolicking in the background. And that was part of the whole intelligent design argument against the reality of evolution. Mm-hmm. And they said, we'll teach the controversy. Well, the controversy existed only in the thin gray settlings that slosh between their ears and pass for brains over on the Republican side of things. Phew! So now, teach the controversy has spread to things like vaccines. And Kentucky Stan Governor Matt Bevin, who is, of course, a repig licking, and he was a teabagger before he's a maggot, but he's a big old maggot now.
Fat Bevan decided to sit down and do a radio interview with WKCT Bowling Green's News Talk Radio. Bowling Green's over there in south central Kentucky, just a stone's throw from the Tennessee state line. That may explain some of it, but Bevan explained in the interview. And by the way, Matt Bevan has 9 kids. Count them. The Bevan family has to every night. You can't keep up with 9 any other way. And in this radio interview, he made the following announcement. You might want to get the hockey puck. Every single one of my kids had the chicken pox. They got the chicken pops on purpose because we found a neighbor. Notice, we found a neighbor. That means they had to go. It's not like we had a neighbor. They just lived nearby, and we heard through the little neighborhood grapevine that. No, they found a neighbor. Hey, any of y'all got any youngins here with the chicken pops? You do? Okay. All right. Every single one of my kids had the chicken pops. They got the chicken pops on purpose because we found a neighbor that had it, and I went and made sure every one of my kids was exposed to it, and they got it. They had it as children. They were miserable for a few days, and they all turned out fine. So the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian governor of Kentucky made sure that his children were, in his own words, miserable. Well, now, we can only be grateful that maybe we've still got smallpox curtailed, because he might go looking for a neighbor that had some smallpox, and he'd make sure they got exposed too. Of course, then maybe they wouldn't have so many youngins to count. But, you know, we'd beat small pops, so it's not like you got to have any satanic vaccinations to keep them from getting the small pops. Right. Yes, indeed. It is the very same place. Steve in New York, wanting a little clarification here. Is that the scene of the tragic Bowling Green massacre? It is, and they're still cleaning up to this day, and hoping that they don't have an outbreak of vaccinatable diseases. So the governor of Kentucky, Stan, actually gave cover to the anti-vaxxers in this country. And I realize we may be hard-pressed to conceive this, but the anti-vaxxers in the United States are probably the single stupidest people in our country. And we've got a lot of stupid in this country. Well, Robert, in Australia, I hope this won't interfere with our friendship, but Robert says, we don't want Ken Ham back. Thank you very much. Oh, but we want you to have him. I mean, look, the Outback is a vast and empty place. Couldn't you just give him a rowboat in the middle of the desert somewhere and tell him it's an ark and maybe he'd come home? Promise him a jar of Vegemite or something. Please? No, really. Anti-vaxxers have these things called chicken pox parties. And one of the sadder aspects of the story is that the chicken pox vaccine only came along about 1995. Chicken pox, and this is important, I mean, I'm fussy with this issue, because adults who get chicken pox are at grave risk of death. And so are newborns. And in the early months of 1996,
before the vaccine had become widely available, chickenpox ran rampant through a little elementary school in a tiny county in West Virginia. And our eldest daughter got him. And that would have been bad enough. And she was, to use Matt Bevin's term, miserable. But somehow or another along the way, my lovely wife had never had them. And in 1996, she was exactly 30. She was 29. She was coming up on 30. And she got adult-onset chickenpox. And it made her gravely ill. And may have led to a lot of the stuff that even now we're going to the doctor trying to figure out what in the hell it is. About a year later, she went blind in her left eye. It resolved, but then she began having a lot of bizarre following symptoms. But that's not all. In the early months of 1996, she was engaged almost full-time in caring for a little bitty newborn baby boy. You know him as Ferg. And he got them. And he almost died. Chickenpox nearly took two of the people I love most on planet Earth from me. Ferg had what they called bolus chickenpox, and bolus is a medical term meaning really fucking big. And he still got a couple of scars from it. He had them everywhere. He had them on the soles of his feet. He had them on the top of his head where, you know, there wasn't much hair yet, but it was there. He had them in his nose. He had them in his throat. And he burned with fever. And yeah, I guess to use Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin's words, he was miserable. But see, he was not quite 3 months old, and he couldn't tell us that. All he could do was wail piteously. And his mother, sicker than any sickness I'd ever seen, nursed him and feared for him, while at the same time, she was within the easy grasp of death itself. So you'll pardon me if I issue a hearty fuck you with a red hot fucking poker, Matt Bevin, deliberately exposing your children to chicken pox when there's a viable vaccine. And as an excuse, he said, well, the reason we didn't vaccinate them is this is America. Which is like saying, the reason we didn't vaccinate them is because we live in the stupidest country on planet Earth. But there's one more factor that goes into this. And that's another disease. And that other disease is called shingles. The science of chickenpox is that chickenpox is actually a form of the herpes virus. And after you've had chickenpox, this much Matt Bevin is right about. It confers immunity to getting chickenpox again, assuming you survive. And yes, otherwise healthy children do die of chickenpox. One of his nine could have easily died of chickenpox. But once you've had the chickenpox, the virus, if we want to talk in computer terms, terminates and stays resident and does so in the cerebral spinal fluid. You get well, but it's never gone. And for reasons that medical science doesn't yet fully understand, later in life, and again, I have a personal example, chickenpox can come back, but it doesn't come back as chickenpox. It comes back as something called shingles. And if you have never had shingles, well, most of us aren't the praying type, but hope with every fiber of your being that you never do. Or go out and get the vaccination, because there's a vaccination now, and once you hit 50, they say, have you had the chickenpox vaccine? Good, let's get you that. I've had it, because I watched my father go through it. And I watched him live in agony, because it doesn't just itch. It doesn't just burn. It aches in a way that you can't, in a way that defies a description of pain. And along the way, it can, and it did, do permanent nerve damage, so that wherever you had the shingles, you have a permanent case of neuropathy and neuralgia. And it just never stops hurting. And so when Matt Bevin exposed his 9 children to the chickenpox, he also made far more likely that they will someday in their adulthood have shingles. Because I'm sure that he's teaching his good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian, anti-vaccination philosophy to them. So maybe they won't go and get the shingles vaccine long after he has shuffled off this mortal coil and they themselves turn 50 and start wondering why they hurt so badly they want to die. So that's our twin thorns for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Nikki Haley, who doesn't understand anything about healthcare or the United States' place in it. And Matt Bevin of Kentucky, who incidentally along the way, besides being an anti-vaxxer, has done everything humanly possible to take healthcare away from Kentuckians. That's a couple of badass thorns. And it also segues nicely into the next portion of the program, because we're going to talk a little bit more about healthcare in this country. Because my dear friend Dan Fisher, whom you have come to know and love, is celebrating, it's not an anniversary, but it is a semi-anniversary? A half-anniversary? Dan, you know what are we going to call this?
We are in the age of silly... Everything has a day now. I know this donut day and make sure to, you know, kiss your pet on the mouth day or something like that.
Today was pepperoni roll day. Yes.
Well,
at least for me,
we're West Virginia. I was going to say, if it were pepperoni day, were West Virginia schools actually open then? Because, you know, they love those
only to pick up the free pepperoni rolls.
I said they. I guess I should say we. But anyway, there was a subject here. What was the subject? Oh, yeah. Health. And your
half-iversary.
Half-iversary. I like that. And it has been, as of yesterday, it's been 6 months since I had my heart transplant, or as I like to call it, my brand new used heart.
New to you.
New to me. And, you know, I've been back to work, and we'll get into that. But I've been so busy, and my wife Helene has been so busy, that we really spent the entire day yesterday not remarking upon it to one another at all. We barely saw each other because as soon as I got home, she went out to go to her nighttime graduate school classes. So so today she asked me, you know, oh, by the way, it was your half birthday or your anniversary, 6 month anniversary. You know, how do you feel about that? And I said, I'll tell you honestly, you know, I did take a moment at some point in my busy new workday to just stop and to just think about where I was 6 months ago, location-wise, as well as where I was in my health, and then where I am now, both location-wise and especially health-wise. So you know, there was, let's just say I celebrated with quiet contemplation, but it was sincere contemplation and sincere gratitude to many, many things, many factors, including my wife and including my doctors and including all of my friends who've been just so outstandingly supportive. And to you, too, you've been a very, you know, a loving friend and a wonderful supporter.
If you don't say adequate, I'm going to be hurt.
We'll get to that. I do want to say, too, that I don't always listen before I come on the show. Sometimes I just get to the mic in time. By the way, do I sound any better than usual? Because I'm using the earbud mic this time. I thought the sound
it is quite clear and quite good.
Good.
You have real presence.
Oh, if only my acting teachers had said the same thing back.
Well, I know who your acting teacher was, and she wouldn't have complimented Jesus Christ.
Well, she was. She is passed on to another place now, so we shall not speak ill of her. What was I talking about again? Oh yes, I was listening to your show, which I don't always have the time to do. Your what do you call it again? Something Thursday?
Thorn in the Side Thursday. Yes.
Yeah, and I just have to say that, especially when you brought it into the personal. When you brought it into talking about your experiences with Ferg and his mother, and I mean it's very passionate and it got me riled up. It got me angry for you. The whole thing got me angry on your behalf and on my behalf too. And there is something to mention about the whole anti-vaxxer thing. I don't know if you were discussing it prior to my coming on, but I, given my position. As a recovering health surgery patient and a heart
recipient. Well, yeah, this really matters to you.
It's to me. I see anti-vaxxing as extremely selfish. You are risking my life. It's one thing if you want to risk killing your kids. They're your kids, and if I don't want any kids killed, but if you're going to kill anybody, kill your own kids.
Well, you know,
go to jail for it.
Right. The Supreme Court has said that Jehovah's Witnesses can deny their children a life-saving transfusion, and the kid can lay there on the table and die, and oh well, freedom of religion.
Look, you know, our responsibility as parents. I've been a parent for a number of years now, and you have too. Our main responsibility is don't let the kid die. You know, you got to do certain things to make sure the kid doesn't die. You got to feed them food. It helps to put clothing on them. That prevents them from dying. You know, you got to make sure they wash up every now and then, or wash up, as they say, you know where.
Yes.
So those, you have very basic elementary responsibilities that any animal really has. You know, every bird and every beast has the responsibility to their children of not letting them die, unless you're one of those species that actually eats your children after they die. But we don't do that yet, mercifully.
Well, we're not catfish, and, you know, catfish are known to eat their young before they go to the great beyond.
But let me just say, I do not endorse the idea of it's America. So if I kill my kids, that's my business. I don't endorse that at all. That said, I really do not endorse the idea that I'm not gonna vax because it's just about me and my kids. No, it's about the whole effing planet, and it's about your neighbors and your friends and your
well,
kids' classmates.
But Dan, what about this notion that Matt Bevin put forward that it's because he said because this is America, and that's what freedom means. Freedom means you're free to make somebody else's kid die.
Well, all I know is what I learned a long time ago on Schoolhouse Rock in the 1970s, which was the preamble to the Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, that's very important, and to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our prosperity. Do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America. In there are a number of things, and that's right off the bat. Before you get into amendments and side notes and signatures, it's saying this whole thing is about making sure we, the people, a collective, have very basic things, including general welfare, and establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, We can't do those things if we're getting our neighbors sick and if we're killing transplant patients who are on or AIDS patients, anybody that has a low immunity deficiency. You are inhibiting their rights to those very basic concepts of general welfare, domestic tranquility. If I'm afraid I'm going to die every time I'm in a restaurant with a bunch of kids running around me, I'm not very tranquil, and I'm not feeling like my welfare needs are being met. So it's not just an individual of it's not just a nation of individuals. It's right on your 25-cent piece, folks. E pluribus unum, out of many, one. We are, and I know that somebody out there right now, if they were listening to your show out of hate and spite, would go, well, that sounds like socialism to me, e pluribus unum, and the idea of uniting. But it is the United States of America. We did have a war about that some time ago, and the side that was for keeping us all together won the war, even though many people are still itching and chafing about that result. But bringing it back to the personal and small scale, it matters. It matters not just to me that, oh, I want to get in your business and I want to make sure that you do something because I want you to do it. You should do it because society demands you do it. And the idea that any court would say, or any referendum would say, well, you know, it's up to you whether you want to have disease or not have communicable disease. That's nonsense. That's antithetical to the Constitution and to the basic precepts of America.
You know, if you're ever up to it and you're not working on a new production or anything, I have to be away from the microphone, I'd love to just turn it over to you, and you could replace the filibobster with the filidanster. And that's a compliment, not an insult. Everything you have said, Dan, is absolutely true. And it's hard to look at something like what we were like this Matt Bevin story out of Kentucky. It's hard to look at Matt Bevin as someone who isn't in his own way. I mean, how the hell is that not malicious assault? And I agree. I understand we're running off into the weeds of the criminal law. Or, you know, to make it maybe a little bit easier, if a vaccine exists and you deliberately get your children sick. Now, understand, this guy's a multimillionaire, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If some poor mommy and daddy up the holler in eastern Kentucky did what Matt Bevin did, I would like to think, I mean, it sounds sort of unfair, but I would like to think that the Kentucky Department of Children and Families or Child Protective Services would be on their door saying, why did, because that is, you know, that's not child neglect. Neglect is when you don't get them the vaccination. Child abuse is what happens when you deliberately make them sick. But he, of course, is protected by his wealth privilege.
That is true. Well, Bob, I mean, I know you, I'm sure you've devoted hours to it that I regret not listening to, having listened to. But we are in an age now where truth is no longer truth. Facts are no longer facts. It used to be the saying, you are entitled to your opinion, but you're not your own facts. But we've evolved or devolved from that point now. And I made a big mistake of wasting at least an hour or two of one of my days by trying to argue online with an anti-vaxxer. My friend Bob Allen from Middleburn, West Virginia, who I think is a first-time listener tonight, by the way.
Hi, Bob.
And I hope he is, or if he isn't listening tonight, I think he will, listen to it tomorrow. But anyway, Bob had posted something about getting your flu vaccine or something like that, something very innocuous. Hey, you know, a little picture of a Band-Aid and something, a meme that says, hey, folks.
An innocuous inoculation meme.
That is correct. Let's give you a pun point for that. You can cash them in later at your nearest Walgreens for fabulous fun and prizes. But I got into the rabbit hole with this anti-vaxxer who, it turns out, was one of Bob's old students and now lives in New Martinsville, West Virginia. And she went down, you know, so many paths of, well, I go online. I learn things from being online. The internet, you know, tells me things. And I tried to be reasonable, like, look, people literally cut people who I loved and trusted enough to cut, or not necessarily love, but people I trusted enough to take a knife to my chest, cut it open, reach in, cut out my heart, replace it with somebody else's heart, stitch it in, and then provide all this other care. I trust those people 1,000%. Part of the reason I do is that I know that, that they're not allowed to just do that because they went online and read a couple of articles. They have to devote something like, what, 10, 12 years of their life to undergrad, grad, medical school, internships. They are extremely, extremely well-trained people. They're not infallible, and we'll get into that after a while in our discussion. But they have certainly more knowledge than your average anti-vaxxer. Let's just give them – let's hold them to that standard. I tried all of these things, and it went back to I know what I'm doing. I go on the internet. And then finally she tried to heart shame me by saying, well, you know, if you hadn't messed up your life so much, you wouldn't have had all these heart problems.
Excuse me? I thought it was a virus?
That's what, you know what, I gave up at that point, and that's where my younger sister, Kath, who is also a good friend of dear Bob Allen, came and jumped in like the lioness that she is.
I remember Kath well, and she is not one to suffer fools.
Yeah, although she doesn't have the high Tina Turner hair anymore. Her hair has flattened out a bit over the years.
Gone are the days.
Yeah, they're not. It's not 8 inches high off the head anymore. But yeah, so she said that. But it doesn't matter. You could say you can present video evidence. You can present X-rays. You could present, you know, their own dead child in front of them, and they're still going to believe what they choose to believe. And that's the way we're living now. That information is no longer information. It is double talk or double plus good. It is Orwellian. And it's only going to get worse, and we could make that into a whole other show. But let's stay on health itself. Speaking of which, and you might have brought it up before I tuned in today, how is Agnes doing?
What I did say is, I mean, we don't know a lot more today than we knew yesterday, but she got appropriate care today, which is a great relief. And
sure,
the blood work that she got back so far looks quite good. You know, we're dealing with a lupus diagnosis.
Yes.
Which, apart from the George Costanza, is it lupus? That was funny. This isn't.
Yes.
They reran the one blood test that shows the one little chemical marker that tends to say yes or no, but even that isn't dispositive. But if it turns out that the one that she got down here that was probably done with a rusty nail and a bat, if the other one comes back negative, then we're going to believe the one that comes back negative. But there's still the thing with lupus is it's a disease that is, I mean, it's all strictly differential diagnosis. Whereas, for instance, with your heart, they looked at your heart and said, "This is bad because we see this." With something like this often applies to many diagnoses in the rheumatological field. It's we see this, 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 and that leads us to think that. But we can't be sure, because something like the immune system, as you have learned yourself, is both broad and deep, and so consequently, she feels better about the fact that she's getting treatment and is being and people are really working on it. Plus, she recently got put on a course of steroids, so, you know, they'll make you feel like Superman anyway.
Steroids can do all kinds of interesting things.
They'll make you feel like Superman, albeit a cranky Superman.
I am one of the I'm a self-professed nice guy, but boy oh boy, I could be a real asshole when I was on steroids. I'm sure Agnes is the exception to the rule.
She absolutely is. That's so nice of you to include that.
I don't know if she listens or does not listen to your show.
Oh, she does. She does.
Do you mind if I say hello to your I'm sure lovely wife for a moment?
Well, she's in the other room, but she listens like everybody else listens.
Is she a co-producer of this show?
She is from time to time, yes. Well, no, she is a co-producer of this program. She makes it possible for me to sit here for 3 hours and do all the things that I have to do during the program. Like she said, and she produces our other program, Dr. Bill O'Brien's program, the Virtual Center for Civics and Responsibility. She produces that 3 days a week. And at one point in time, Dan, I was the talent. You know what the talent is. I was the talent. I just had to sit there and talk, and she pushed all the buttons and twisted all the knobs until we had a minor riot among preteen children, and she said, "Nah, I got to get out of here. There's four children in there that's going to tear this house to the ground." And so she bid me a fond adieu and went forth.
Wow, that sounds biblical at the end. What was I going to say? Well, I just wanted to say to Agnes, who I assume is listening, that I appreciate and I thank you for, you know, today, before we went on, a couple of hours before we went on, I am Bob, and I asked if it was okay to talk about this, your specific situation, and he assured me it was okay, and that can't be easy. I'm a patient too, in a way, lupus, is that a lifetime condition? Is that something that for the rest of
Agnes's
life?
Yeah, once you've got it, you've got it.
You have to deal with it. Well, Agnes, I can only tell you that in my own way, I sympathize with this, but I truly admire and thank you for your honesty and your openness about sharing information about what you're going through. And I would also respect it if you didn't. Every person has a different angle on it, and they're all valid angles. But I thank you for that, and I assure you, although we've never met, I'm 100% in your corner, and if there is anything I could do besides offer the obligatory thoughts and prayers, I certainly would do it.
Well, that's very kind and sweet of you, and she was thinking of you yesterday, because you know I told her that yesterday was your half-iversary.
Uh-huh.
And as we crossed the bridge. And what used to be just a simple trip off of I-79 down into Morgantown across the Star City Bridge and blah, blah, is now like probably something you see trying to get, I mean, not like, you know, full on like trying to get into New York City, but Jesus, the traffic in Morgantown's crazy. So we came across the Star City Bridge, across the Monongahela River. Uh-huh. And there to the right, she said, "Isn't that where?" And I said, "Yes, the Unco Mon Valore Theater."
Unco Mon Valore. I'll recap that story for the uninitiated. Bob and I were college students together at West Virginia University, and we would sometimes do fun things together, like go to Sunnyside for a beer or two or 12, or sometimes we'd go to the movies together. And there used to be a time when a movie theater would only show one or two movies at a time, not 25 like there is today. And there was a doubleplex down in Star City, which is nearby Morgantown. And that doubleplex was showing a couple of movies. And one of them, I was convinced, was a foreign film, which I was really into.
Italian, even.
I was really into my Fellini phase at the time. And so I saw on the marquee, Unco Mon Valore. And I'm like, oh, I got to see that. It turned out to be Gene Hackman in one of those sort of Rambo-esque type movies called Uncommon Valor. They had accidentally lost the M off the sign. But I was all hot to see Unco Mon Valore.
Hey, where's the subtitles? I understand this.
It's Gene Hackman yelling at people for 2 hours and things blowing up. Oh, God,
and so,
I intended to be super serious tonight. I really intended to try to stay out of the movie business as much as I could tonight. But you just when I thought I was out, you pull me back in, Bob.
Well, you know, I'm like that. You know, hey, Dan, the first one's free. But as we drove by, she grabbed her iPhone, pointed it out the window and said, I got to take this so that we can show Dan where the Unco Mon Valore, what is at the Unco Mon Valore Theater now. That whole mall is gone.
Oh, man.
And it's been replaced by
It's been replaced by a CVS and an Aldi.
What's Aldi? I don't know what that is.
Aldi's a grocery store.
Oh, is that in the local area?
No. It's nationwide. Somebody explained to me on the program one night that two brothers came out of the grocery business, two German brothers. One of them, and I hope this is correct, I hope I'm telling it right, one of them founded Aldi and the other one founded Trader Joe's.
Mm.
And I'm a hopeless Trader Joe's fanboy. But Aldi, they've got good products at great prices, and they encourage responsibility. For instance, when you get your shopping cart, you have to put like a quarter into the little dispenser so you can get your shopping cart. And then you get your quarter back when you put your damn buggy back instead of, you know, leaving it 3 acres out into the parking lot for whatever might happen.
See, that's what you have to do now. You have to provide financial incentive for pretty much any responsible, not selfish act. We're at that point. And have I left a buggy in the parking lot? We all have. I mean, you know, I'm not going to bitch slap myself too much over that. But I do. I am one of those guys. I got a humble brag here. I am one of those guys that does take the cart more often than not. I'll bring it into the damn store. You know, I'll bring it all the way into the store and I'll walk clear around the cash registers to come back out the store because that's how they have it set up so that I don't steal from them. But anyway, folks, we'll be back with some life-saving health tips soon. But first, some personal anecdotes about movies and grocery shopping.
Right. because that's what makes this all so special.
The tangents?
Absolutely. Well, in many ways, the moments where we get serious and talk about something are tangential to the good times that we find ourselves having along the way.
Well, it is the healthcare thing. I mean, you and I really could not. I had intended on speaking on the subject of healthcare for about a week since I had contacted you to say, hey, how about I come on again? And you, of course, were very kind about that. But we couldn't have asked for a better day to throw crap in our lap, huh? You know, with Nikki Haley and with the Kentucky governor and everything. Healthcare is always in the news to some extent.
And you know what? You know, since the comparison was between the Finns and the United States, I wonder what the Finnish vaccination rate is. You know, with Nikki Haley bringing it, because I'm guessing a population that's that generally healthy, they don't get all worked up. They don't have anti-vaxxers who think that somehow or another, not getting their kids vaccinated entitles them to a free urine-colored snake flag that says "Don't read to me."
Well, look, I won't get too sanctimonious about it because I don't know that much more about Finland than does Nikki Haley. I might know less, but this is what I don't. There's a lot I don't know about any other country than America, the United States. There's so much I don't know, and I think that even some of your more well-informed, educated listeners might even kind of in their heads right now be going, you know what? I'm smart about a lot of things, but I don't know that much about Europe, or I don't know much about Africa. I don't. But what you and I both, I think, probably grew up with this idea that the way to show your love for America is to assume that we're just the best at everything all the time. And so any country like Finland or any other country, there's something wrong with their system. Canada, you've got to wait 3 days to get an aspirin in Canada. No, you don't. You know, or, oh, it's socialism. You know, those countries are living in socialism, and socialism is bad and evil. I get rather queasy at the word socialism myself, because I was educated to be queasy about that word for all of my school days and through all of my upbringing.
Yeah, high school and college both. The only thing you were taught about Karl Marx was to hate him.
Yeah, and also you were told these anecdotes about how things weren't so bad in Russia until Lenin and Stalin came along, and now you have to stand in line for 3 hours to get bread. And isn't it great that we live in America where we can go into the local Aldi's and get a loaf of bread? And for all I don't know what's true and not true, but what I in my gut feel, and I know that's bad stuff because Trump often dictates policy through his expanding gut,
Well, I was thinking a little further south, but that's okay.
Okay. But in my gut, I can't believe that these other countries, that it's horrible as we've been told. And that it's, there are famine conditions. There is poverty over around the world. But there are examples of good things going on all around the world. And we'd be fools not to copy them. You know, if somebody is doing better on a certain test than you are, and you have the opportunity to peek an answer at that test, wouldn't you put down the same answer? You know it's a right answer.
Well, yeah, and you know, Randy in PA just sent a message in, and I think it bears mentioning. We set up a lot of those countries that have those responsive, competent medical systems in the wake of World War II. So in a way, it's not that we're trying to catch up to them. It's that we're just trying to do what we, you know, some of us would like to just do what we thought apparently was a pretty damn good idea in the first place.
Right. And of course, you know, we as Americans, or especially in the case of Nikki Haley's response to the Finland situation, if you want to call it that, was she equates, and we all do to some extent, quality with money. The idea that the Finnish couldn't possibly, she was confusing the idea of universal health insurance with, and that's bad and terrible and inefficient and doesn't work, with whatever, that's the opinion, not mine, with what the actual health care is. So that's got to be horrible and terrible because we have deemed the insurance aspect of it terrible. The, you know, ignoring all statistics that you cited and that I read today as well. We just have to accept the fact that certain countries are doing some things better than we are. And instead of going, well, you know, fuck that, we're America, we should say, well, what can we borrow from them? What ideas can we steal?
A Finnish brain surgeon does not close up somebody's scalp, having just saved them from a deadly aneurysm, wash up, take the scrubs off, and then go out on the street and sell pencils and apples. Okay, that surgeon is well compensated and lives in one of the happiest countries on earth.
Right.
Finland, incidentally. If you saw the Michael Moore film, Where to Invade Next.
I did. My daughter had me watch it.
You remember the Finnish education segment?
Oh, yeah.
They pay teachers like we pay doctors.
Yeah.
Because they exist on a continuum in a location that is almost side by side in terms of social importance. Because if you do not educate your children well, there's not going to be much for the doctors to need to work on later.
It's unbelievable that we have to explain these things to people. I went down another unfortunate Facebook rabbit hole about a week ago on another friend's thing. She just posted something innocuous about education. Or actually, it wasn't so innocuous. She posted an article on the $7.1 billion proposed budget cut to the Department of Education. And one of her MAGA friends got on there about how, you know, why do we need the United States government getting involved in education in the first place? And that the, you know, taking that $7 billion and applying it to a wall is a much better investment in the security and well-being of the United States. And my response was, are you fucking nuts? Public education is our only real hope. And if you take that $7 billion away that the federal government provides, what we have to do then is ask the local and state governments to provide that $7.1 billion. Therefore, taxes go up enormously. And her response was, well, yeah, that's easy for you to say because you're in New York. She'd obviously looked on my Facebook profile. You're in New York, and I don't like the idea that I'm in Oregon and I'm paying federal taxes that then go to you guys in New York for your schools. And I just had to reply one more time before logging off. That's nonsense talk. I live in New York State, which is one of the most prosperous. We have one of the highest per capita incomes in the United States. The entire state does. And we pay we pay one of the highest rates of federal taxation. And local and state, for that matter, taxation as well in the nation. So I'm probably subsidizing your Oregon students' educations, and I'm happy to. I'm happy knowing that some of my federal taxes might just go down to West Virginia and give the teachers a pay increase. They deserve it. It's nonsense to the idea that you can't get you could expect to pay, you know, McDonald's wages to somebody that's just gone through 4 or 6 or 8 years of school and they're going to devote their life to teaching your children. But by the way, you know, you have to pay for your own erasers. You have to pay for your own whiteboard markers. That's just insane. And if you know, I guess that makes New York State, or at least my part of it, Rockland County, we're kind of like the Finland of education. My kids had a phenomenal education up here. And every time Rockland has a proposal to raise the taxes for to go toward education, we always approve it wholeheartedly. It never has any much of opposition. And as a result, I've got two kids that are both at one of the top schools in the world, I should say. And it's not just because they're smart. It's because they had people that knew what to do with those smarts and really nurtured it and helped give them opportunities that I know other students don't have, that I didn't have when I was growing up as a West Virginia public school student. I want money to flow through that system. And I want more. Tax the hell out of me, or take some of the money away from some stuff that, you know, let's pay for one less IBCM and throw it into the Department of Education. I'm for all that.
Well, and there's the larger issue, and you talk about the tax base and tax rates. There's the larger issue, Dan, and this is just a fact. New York, Massachusetts, California, Washington. Y'all carry Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina on your backs. And yeah, West Virginia too. Most definitely West Virginia.
And in the words of Donald Trump regarding John McCain, did I ever get a thank you note?
Right. And see, that's a real thank you note that needs to be. And the only only reason you wind up doing that is because the people in those states choose election in and election out not to have good government. I don't know if you realize this. I follow Alabama news because, you know, born there. But they recently had a rift in the Republican Party of Alabama because Alabama has super majorities in both their House and their Senate, and the governor is a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And they hadn't raised the gasoline tax since 1994, and so the Republicans said, we're going to raise the gasoline tax by a dime. And some of the more, I guess we'd say teabaggery, Trumpy Republicans declared that to be heresy. I suppose they'd rather drive on gravel roads. I oppose regressive taxation like taxes at the pump. I think you need to take care of that by a progressive income tax scheme. But God forbid that the people with greater wealth in Alabama should be asked to pay their fair share.
Right.
And so the fact that they choose not, in a way, it's sort of a passive aggressive insistence on secession. They never really got over it. They got their ass handed to them 150 plus years ago. But they're not over it. And they're by God, not going to pay for none of that damn government as long as them Yankees will pay for it.
It's preserving a way of life, I've been told. The main thing is I don't want dumb citizenry. I want United States to be the smartest, have the smartest citizens in the world. And not just for political reasons, like, an informed citizenry then will more likely ensure that my progressive ideals are realized. I want smart. When I was in the hospital, right? Who performed my surgery? It was a Japanese doctor, a surgeon named Dr. Naka. Both of my surgeons were from Japan. When I was lying in bed afterward, the RNs taking care of me were Caribbean. They were Haitian. They were Indian. They were Pakistani. And when I spoke with one of the Indian RNs, I said, when did you come here and all these things? You know, there's a lot of time to talk. And we started talking about her education background. And in India, And I don't know if she came from like a lower class or a middle class, for all I know, upper class. But she said in her early years of education, the grade schools, the middle schools, the high schools, it was very, very stringent education. It was very much like you studied hardcore math, hardcore science. You didn't really waste time on what they considered frivolities. She got a very strong math and science education from an early age. She then came to America for our university system and our college system. But there was just such a strong emphasis on education and when she grew up. And I would hear this throughout the personnel who tended to me, whether it were the surgeons or the post-care team, that whatever their backgrounds were, it all had in common a very strong emphasis on education, which is apparent. They're there at New York Columbia Presbyterian, and they're doing the top-level work that place is known for. I want smart people. I like people smarter than me. I want to learn things from people. I try never to be the person that just is in for an argument. I try to listen and learn from people who are smarter than me. And it's so frustrating when you don't have that and you feel like you're just trying to inform people of very basic facts, let alone opinions, but just very basic, here it is right in front of your face facts, and yet all you get is blowback of, well, that's not real, that's fake, or I believe this anyway, or Jesus doesn't want me believing this fact.
And, you and I talk a lot of movies, and this is a way to sort of work in. I trust somewhere along the way you've seen Idiocracy.
You would trust wrongly, and I'm a big Mike Judge fan. I love Silicon Valley, and I loved, what was the show, the cartoon he did?
Oh, Beavis and Butthead.
The other one there.
King of the Hill.
Yeah, I love his humor. And he has a great, by the way, he's got a great great series that you can see on YouTube called Tales from the Tour Bus, which is, he animates the history of various musical legends doing very, very bad but funny things. Like he has two episodes devoted to George Jones, including the famous tractor incident, and another one.
I'm as soon as the program's over, I'm finding it.
Oh, and there's a great one on George Clinton, the founder of Parliament Funkadelic, and just where he just basically spent 50 years on acid. it's a great.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I'll get you back to the main subject. But yes, I love Mike Judge, and for some nonsensical reason I can't explain, I've not seen Idiocracy. So tell me about it, Bob. I want to learn.
Well, I don't – now that you've said no, I don't want to spoil it for you. But
okay.
But the thing is, everything you just described, the genius of the film is that Mike Judge took the present day, cast it in a science fiction-y sort of light – told us that it was 500 years in the future and proceeded to hold a mirror up to the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
The visuals are magnificent. And, healthcare in the 25th century at St. God's Memorial Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Mike Judge. But maybe next time the kids come back down for break, you might want to put that one on the list.
Okay. Well, my kids are more progressive than I am at this point. So I'm sure they'll enjoy it. And being, since they go to school up in Canada and they come down for a couple of months out of every year, I'm sure they have a different perspective on Americanism than I do. Just cause they're looking at it they're looking at us from up above, so to speak. And who doesn't love a good laugh? And I know Mike Judge can deliver the laughs.
Oh my God, no, you will not be okay. You might want to, that handful of pills you've told us about taking, you might want to add like one mellow out pill to it, just because it's not just ha ha ha, isn't that cute? It's somebody get me a drink of water, I can't stop laughing funny.
Oh wow. And it's also a little bit of holy shit funny, it sounds like.
Yes.
Too. Like,
oh,
holy
no.
Shit!
Yeah. And the temptation to just sit here and start throwing concepts at, I just won't do it. I won't. I like you too much. You're too good a friend. You deserve to experience. Because if I could experience Idiocracy again for the first time, I would. Let's put it that way. But one of the realities of the healthcare situation that you're talking about is, for instance, something that let me simply begin by asking, how long has it been since you've been to Morgantown?
It's been at least 10 years.
Okay. In those 10 years, Morgantown has become a place that is nigh unrecognizable. Traffic, you know, it's sort of the American disease that we always think about growth, and then we think about, hey, how we're going to get to all the growth. This is all kind of screwed up. I don't think we can do this with two-lane roads anymore. But one of the driver of all of this growth is WVU Medical Center.
Right.
And you remember when the only thing there was of WVU Medical Center was that that one hospital that was done in sort of the mid-50s brutal realism architectural style, and it has exploded, Dan. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. WVU Medicine is probably the biggest economic engine in the city.
Well, if you don't count WVU football.
Yeah, I'd say bigger. No, really,
wow.
Bigger.
Wow.
And there's a certain...
That's impressive, then.
Well, and there's a certain, not irony, but a certain natural flow of things that they're parked right next to each other. The football stadium and the athletic complexes and WVU Medicine... All just right there in that Evansville area.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving by the CAC yesterday, and they had a big, the electronic message board over by the Coliseum. CAC parking closed during game days. And CAC parking was never easy. The Creative Arts Center, you know, where
You mean during game days, that's to be used for football fans and students and teachers at the Creative Arts Center?
And
not allowed to park?
Yeah, and basketball. And basketball. You know, basketball that has 30 games a season.
Wow.
So
you can't see it, but maybe you can hear my eyes rolling over that one.
Well, mine did, too. But the larger issue that I was going to get at is that they've got none of this expansion would be possible without Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And since its institution 10 years ago, without the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
Because there's just not enough people with enough money to pay for for-profit health care prices to support a medical center like that in this state.
And yet, if you asked many West Virginians, are you for the Affordable Care Act, or are you for the ACA, Affordable Care Act, many of them would say, well, I like a lot about it. You know, you might get results split 50-50. But if you said, are you for Obamacare?
Bingo.
Bingo. Oh, that's socialism.
That's that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper communism.
I don't have to tell your listeners, because they are well informed, that the ACA is Obamacare. Obamacare was not called Obamacare because Obama named it after himself. It was a derogatory term created by the Republicans to try to downsell the ACA. And anyway, there's that.
And so the reason I bring all of that up is that the next step now has to be taken, and compare, for instance, since I mentioned Alabama, compare Alabama, where they said, well, we ain't going to take none of that free money from the government, and West Virginia that said, what? Free money? Are you kidding?
Mm.
This is West Virginia. Bring it by the wheelbarrow, please.
Well, they West Virginia, listen, if it weren't for Robert Byrd and his many decades of being part of, one of the big shots of the Senate. I mean, federal money has kept West Virginia alive for decades.
Right, which Republicans referred to as more of that Robert Byrd pork.
Right.
As opposed to the idea that maybe making the lives of more Americans better wasn't, necessarily a good thing. But what I'm getting at is, so you've got this massive expansion of the WVU medical system, not just in Morgantown. They're buying hospitals all over West Virginia.
I did not know that.
They are. Alabama, meanwhile, is losing, you know, the little rural community hospitals, like where you take little Timmy when he gets, he's in Little League and he gets hit by pitch, you know, in the ribs and cracks a rib, and you take him
poor
to the little
Timmy, yeah, Timmy.
Those little community hospitals are dropping like flies in Alabama because there is no Medicaid money coming into the state.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more than happy to continue to not have the Medicaid money coming into the state because freedom.
So you remember all that brouhaha about death panels? That kind of sounds like death panels to me.
Well, it is. It absolutely is. And remember how they complained ever so bitterly about picking winners and losers?
Mm-hmm.
This is that too.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the problem, though, and it's, you know, and as is everything in this country, Dan, you think you've got a problem that's one thing, but if you rotate it, if you rotate it 90 degrees in space, oh damn, it's a different problem. And so the healthcare problem in the United States, just like the gun problem in the United States, turns out to be a political problem.
Right.
So back when and the Horn Family Community Congregation knows this because I wail on it so much. Back when John Roberts in the Supreme Court declared that the Affordable Care Act, it wasn't constitutional as a matter of interstate commerce, and this is off in the weeds of constitutional law, but because John Roberts is the most brilliant and evil Republican in America, most people don't know that, he said, but we will let the Affordable Care Act stand as long as we recognize it's part of those heathen Democrats' relentless desire to tax America into oblivion, the congressional power to tax. So they let let the Affordable Care Act, the for-profit side of it, stand as a tax matter, but then they said, but you, Congress, do not have the power to compel the sovereign states of these here new 90 states of America to accept free money.
Right.
And so suddenly what was going to be, because Medicaid is, and the, you know, the idea was we were going to raise the standards for, we were going to bring more people into the Medicaid system, mainly the working poor. And we were going to make
that we have such a thing as working poor is a shame into itself.
Bingo. But it was going to be nationwide, so that was going to be a huge pool. Well, people were going to be on Medicaid, and sick people were going to be on Medicaid, and they would just be the people who couldn't afford to pay for health insurance for themselves. But in one fell swoop, John Roberts and the majority that he cobbled together said, no, you can't do that. So then each state had to say, well, we'd like the free money. We'd like the free money. West Virginia said they'd like the free money. Virginia said, we'll pass, thank you. And South Carolina said, none of that communism free money for us. And Georgia said, no, thank you. And basically the Confederacy said, no, thank you.
You're right. And what happens too with that, or what has happened, is that instead of killing the ACA, AKA Obamacare, all at once, it's really just been killing it in little bits at a time. You know, it's been strangling it just slowly and watching it as it its last breaths, which is the idea that you could do that you could say to the states, you don't have to comply with what had been accepted as the parameters of the ACA. You don't have to accept the money. You can make your and the same with the individual mandate and how that's changed. With last year's budget proposal, that got enacted, which is that the individual mandate penalty that had been in place during the Obama years, if you chose not to have health insurance, you had to pay some amount of money into the system for the right to not be insured. Now that penalty is reduced to $0. So there is no incentive other than your own taking care of yourself and your family, but there's no financial incentive to necessarily be insured. That you don't have to be insured because there's no mandate, and because of that, there are fewer customers that are paying into the system, just as with what you described, the Southern refusal to take evil government money. There's less money in the system to insure everybody. Therefore, individuals, especially in certain states, are paying higher premiums than other people. And, you know, when I've discussed the ACA and I've discussed Obamacare with friends from other states, I've heard people who say, you know, my premium has went the hell up. I'm paying a lot more money now than I used to. Therefore, Obamacare is evil and wrong. And I have to sympathize with them. I have to believe them when they tell me this.
Well, I'm not – see, my position, Dan, is that the Affordable Care Act and the Medicaid expansion where it was allowed ameliorated the situation, but it basically – no offense – put a Band-Aid on a sucking chest wound.
Uh-huh.
And you have you have to take a next step. And for instance,
it was intended to be that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm going to write, you know, even Obama never said the ACA and what you call Obamacare, this is not the end of it at all. This is the first step. Obama agreed with you and said so more than once. Not that anybody who didn't want to hear actually listened.
Well, exactly. And so the next step, and if you really want to get in the weeds, I don't mean right now, go and read an executive summary of Pramila Jayapal's Medicare for All Act that was recently introduced in the House.
Mm-hmm.
It's massive. And it actually goes where I think the ACA would have gone, because there's some history involved here. For instance, way back in the 60s, when Lyndon Johnson signed Medicare into law.
Uh-huh.
It was for people 65 and older, of course. But the thinking back then was that succeeding Congresses could lower it, might have lowered it along the way, 62, 59, until you've got a true universal health care system in place. Well, that was also the thinking behind the Medicaid expansion, because when they raised the eligibility to I think 137% of the poverty level, and what we call the poverty level in the United States is an obscenity, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that brought more people into the Medicaid system, and the thinking was that a subsequent Congress could look at those since it was going to be universal. I mean, it was going to be, you know, all 50 states. Congress would look at it and say, hey, let's make it 150%. And another Congress would say, let's make it 200%. And thereby, you expand people into the Medicaid pool that way. And that's, you know, one of the curses of politics in America. Politics intervenes. Johnson decided not to run for president in 1968 because he had gotten the Vietnam War wrapped around his neck.
Yep.
And so then you've got the war in the Democratic Party over who was sufficiently ideologically pure and the Vietnam War, and you wind up with Hubert Humphrey, his vice president, as the Democratic nominee. Nixon, and very even our generation, very few people, Dan, know how narrowly Nixon squeaked into office.
Well, the first time, and then in 72, he went.
And then in 72, it was a landslide. And the same thing happens after the Affordable Care Act is passed in 2010. You get the teabagger revolution. So instead of looking at going from 137 to 150%, they started taking it back, trying to take it back to zero, and figure out ways to kill Medicaid outright.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about politics, I mean, it's not just American politics, by the way, but politics in many ways has always been about the distribution of money, or let's say even the distribution of power. And in our country, at least, in many other countries and throughout history, power equals money. So it's not just about how much money we each have. It's also about, okay, the money that might be collected in the form of taxes, how does that thing get distributed? That's really what makes the difference between Finland and us. They pay a much higher rate in taxes, but they feel that's a collective investment that pays off, that their lower individual costs, for other things.
And right. And yet the Finns have 6 weeks of paid vacation every year.
Yeah. So
public or private, they travel all over Europe. They come to America. They go where they wish. They're not sitting shivering in the dark or selling the aforementioned apples and pencils.
But listen, we've been talking about healthcare for the past 10, 15 minutes, only really mainly in terms of money. We've been talking about insurance and ACA and how it all gets paid for. And of course, it's extraordinarily important. If you don't have the means to pay for it, you will not get the care. I am extraordinarily fortunate, and I never, ever forget it, that I am in a union, IATSC Local 52, which has an excellent health insurance policy. Actually, it's the entire union. IATSC nationwide helps provide for my health insurance. I have Oxford Freedom Plan, which means I can go to pretty much any hospital in the United States and get whatever the hell I need. And what I needed was a new heart, and that's very expensive, and they paid for it. And once a month or so, I need to have biopsies, and that's all. Everything is expensive, and it all gets paid for. I'm super duper lucky, and I never forget it. But if you don't have money, if you don't have health insurance, what do you do? Do you just, too many people, I know people who are just playing roulette. They're like, well, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm not getting sick, I'm not going to the doctor, so I'm not going to have health insurance. And I'll
you're talking to one of them, Dan.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, I am too rich for Medicaid and too poor for the ACA.
Oh God. So
I get told that once a year.
How do you deal with what you just did yesterday?
Agnes has coverage.
Oh, Agnes does, but you don't. What happens when you get sick?
Bad things.
You have to whip out your credit card. Do you have to pay that way?
I'm being
very personal, but it's
no. You make payments, and you do everything you can to not get sick.
Right.
I mean, and the fact that you sit around day in and day out worrying about what you're going to do when you do, not if you do, when you do, will contribute to you getting sicker.
Right. And for many people, and I'm not saying you, Bob, but for many people, the real answer is, if I'm really that sick, I'll go to the emergency room. They have to take me, which was a policy, a law that was enacted by Republican President Ronald Reagan. And here's the kicker, too, about the whole thing of the ACA and the ideals behind that everybody must have health insurance and contribute toward that. That is not an originally a Democrat ideal, a liberal idea. That came from the Nixon years, and one of its earliest proponents was Newt Gingrich. This was a Republican idea because it goes along with the idea of individual responsibility. Those words that conservatives are supposed to embrace and us hippy-dippy commie liberals are supposed to just run away from in fright. But the idea is if you have health insurance, that means that when you get sick, and I'm not castigating you, Bob, because you lack it, but when you get sick, you should be responsible for paying for it by having health insurance. And if you don't get sick, you're putting into somebody, you're putting into the pot. It all gets paid for.
But you kind of opened the door. Let me flesh this out a little bit for you.
Okay.
I'm genetically predisposed to manufacture triglycerides and cholesterol. It comes from thousands of years living, up near the Arctic Circle. Not me, but my ancestors. And the ability to store fat was the ability to live to the next spring. So I have hyperlipidemia and hypertriglyceridemia, and that has contributed to a pretty significant failure of my gut. Some people know this, but what happens is when they get too high, my gallbladder goes into overdrive. and starts secreting sludge into the what's called the common bile duct. When the common bile duct stops up, the duct where the juice, the enzyme juices that come out of the pancreas, they back up into the pancreas and start eating the pancreas from the inside out.
Wait.
This is called pancreatitis. I've had it more times now than I can count, except for the fact I can count them all, because every one of them is the most pain I have ever been in my life. And the only, this is insult upon injury. So when that happens, my abdomen blows up, swells up. I'm not even going to try to describe the pain. Anybody who's ever had it knows it. And there's a version of it, the boys under the bridge will get it from drinking the screw top wine all day long and twice on Sunday. I have what's called idiopathic pancreatitis. And that means we really don't know for sure. But the best guess is it's that backup, plumbing problem that I just described to you.
Does it affect your other organs as well? I mean, all of that fluid.
It puts pressure on the diaphragm because of where the pancreas is. It's affected my spleen. And it ain't good for the heart. And the only respite for it, short of having somebody go in and, take a little off the top, is to stop eating for about 6 weeks. Jesus.
That's kind of rough.
Jesus quit eating for 40 days. The last time it happened, I lost 60 pounds in 4 weeks. I do not recommend this as a diet.
The heart failure is also a quick and not good way of losing weight, too.
I can
tell you that.
Exactly. So this also comes, I don't know if you heard when I was talking earlier about, you remember, Dan, how we would beat poetry at each other?
Uh-huh.
You remember Allen Ginsberg saying, I saw the best minds of my generation angel-headed hipsters looking for an angry fix.
The first lines of the Howl, yes.
Yeah. Well, so I carry that all around inside of me, just like I take our memories around with me, and they were much in the front of my mind yesterday evening as I went walkabout up and down High Street.
Uh-huh.
And I was looping through an alley. You remember those little narrow alleys?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I was looping through one of those alleys, and I saw a girl fixing.
Oh, Jesus.
Tourniquet on the arm, inner teeth, needle in the arm. And I the first thing that flashed through my head was, well, Morgantown, you're all grown up now.
Mm.
Because we got people doing things in alleys that we think
in
people
alleys.
Do in alleys in, forgive me, New York. Or used to, back in the bad old days.
Yeah, Kojak and the French Connection and so forth.
Right,
show you those
and it just floored me because I know what the heroin, fentanyl, and pill epidemic is in Southern West Virginia because I see it all the time. But I don't see people fixing in an alley. And
did that young woman, did she look like she was a student type or was she more of a local type?
I'd say at one point, my best guess is at one point in time, she was a student. But with the massive increase in the student population in Morgantown, High Street and downtown, with all that expansion out in Evansdale and everything, High Street is kind of withering, which is sad because that used to be the beating heart, that in Sunnyside.
Sure.
But I saw a lot of people there who were probably students who are now homeless people because they washed out, couldn't get home, whatever. And so, it was shocking. It was really shocking. But to bring that full circle, the only respite when I get hit by one of these attacks is, and I've had to beg and plead, is to give me about a 1 month supply of hydrocodone. and I live on hydrocodone and water for a month.
Tell me in the audience what hydrocodone does.
It's an opioid. It's a powerful opioid. And
I expected that.
And it's a painkiller. And it's highly addictive. But if you are using it for what it is prescribed for, and you stop the minute you do not need it anymore, I've never had a problem. And like I said, I've been through this 6 or 7 times. But
you
exceptional. I've had to sit on doctors' examining room tables and beg. And begging for opioids does not inspire confidence in the local medical community, because everybody begs for opioids in West Virginia. And to round this all out, the business about, well, I'll just go to the ER. Well, that requirement that you mentioned is only with an eye towards stabilization. The minute they declare you stable, you're gone.
You're gone.
They don't have to fix anything.
Right.
So I have sat in emergency rooms and had them tell me, well, you know, you got another, your pancreatitis is back. Quit drinking. And I said, I quit drinking a long time ago. And I did. And, you know, like last night I posted a bottle of IC Light on Instagram.
Are you there? Did
yeah.
I lose
no,
you?
No, you didn't. I'm here.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, and I was keeping my mouth shut.
No.
Okay,
I did because, you know, memories and, you know, chronosynclastic infundibula and things like that. But I don't drink.
I don't either.
Because I don't dare.
Same reason.
And, you know, I've modified, you know, you were asking, what do? You modify your diet. You enjoy things in smaller portions. You enjoy them less often. You don't eat biscuits and gravy every day of your life like you would like to. You try to get exercise. And those are all good things. And one of the beautiful things about the Affordable Care Act when it was originally passed was that it contained, and this is thanks to Bernie Sanders, it contained an aspect for rural clinics and wellness.
Wellness, yep.
Because if you can get on the front end of something and keep it from happening, it's a lot easier than trying to fix something bad that has happened.
I'm gonna use that as a means to interject here with some personal experience of my own, which is when I was in the hospital recovering from my heart transplant surgery, I had a semi-private room, meaning I had a roommate for the 3 weeks I was there, and the roommates would rotate. Some of them would only be in for two days or so, and some would be in for four or six days. But I saw so many cases of resistance with these people that just had bypass surgery. I think I was the only transplant person that had been in that semi-private room, but a number of my roommates had bypass or had stents put in and so forth. And a lot of them, frankly, they were overweight, a number of them, or they seemed to have issues and problems maintaining their own personal health aside from what had happened with them. And I worry about those people to this day. I think of some of those men who were lying in a bed next to my bed. Are they eating right? Are they taking any kind of walks? Because I saw a few people. I'm like, I don't think that guy's gonna make it. I hope I'm wrong, but I see the wife who's sort of pampering him and bringing food to the hospital. I saw that people bringing food for their heart patient husbands to eat in the hospital. That's, I'm sure, not copacetic with the nutritionist guidelines.
Yeah, the corned beef with the half inch thick layer of fat on it, that,
or even just stuff heavy in salt or heavy in sauces. Yeah. And God knows, Americans, we love our salt, we love our sugar. I do, and I'm very often guilty of nutritional transgressions. But I just see so much of, and there's a very important wellness, getting back to your topic, wellness is very important, not just, you know, not just think of, okay, take these pills or do this or that and you'll feel better in a while. But yeah, get stopping it in the first place by eating what you know you're supposed to eat, or even though you don't want to go outside and walk because it's not even 50 degrees out there, you put on an extra layer and you do it anyway. But what was important for me personally, has been for some time, is psychological wellness. I will be upfront and say I've seen the same therapist for over 10 years. My father had issues with depression, and I've had some issues with it and anxiety. And then certainly going through what I went through with the surgery and life afterwards, and having my life changed so radically, so quickly, after having been used to a certain style of life, a certain pace of my life suddenly changing, I needed to have somebody besides my wife and my friends to talk with and to share the experience, and who could help me deal with these issues emotionally. And I saw so many people that I still worry about. Like that guy got checked out of the hospital. He was ready to go home because his heart issues, his insurance, sometimes the insurance would send him home. But he isn't ready emotionally. You can see it. He's depressed. He's going home to a family that's confused and not sure what to do for him. And this is going to lead me into something I was going to talk about if we were going to be able to have my wife join us on this conversation. She is not able to. She is busy with some issues of homework and so forth for her grad studies. But Helene, my wife, Helene Fisher, co-founded some years ago with her partner, Anna Allen, an organization called Say Ah. And they do have a website. It's say-ah.com, which helps patients and doctors kind of deal with this stuff. In the terms of patients, it's the idea of being what's called health literate, of really understanding what you're going through and what you can do to help yourself get through it. And also, SAYAH works with doctors and medical professionals to help them try to communicate better to their patients in ways that their patients can understand. I consider myself a fairly, let's say, above average intelligent person, but yet throughout my life, I've been told things by doctors that have, hold on one second. Well, I can't talk and read at the same time. SAYAH.org. I'm being corrected by my wife.
Hi, Helene. You're listening.
Well, I've got the earphones in, so you just yelled in my ears.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. SAY-AH.org, not .com. But what I have learned by being the husband of the co-founder of SAYAH, and I certainly don't mean to be a spokesperson for this wonderful organization, I can only give my version of it, which I learned certainly when I was a patient, is how to be a better listener, how to ask questions, how to be more organized. You know, I have to load up my own pill tray every week to this day. There's a lot of pills. And if you come into it without a real system, without a real idea of how you're going to manage that, it's very easy to get lost or put in the wrong dosages or just give up. And people do give up. There's a very high rate among heart transplants, I think up to 50% of people who just more or less stop taking the medications or take what they want to take because they don't like certain things or that don't do the walks or don't eat right.
And the aforementioned effects of the aforementioned steroids.
And there is that too. But, you know, as I go through the medication process, all of the medications go down and down as I get healthier. I take far less anti-immunes than I started out with, and therefore fewer steroids. I'll always be on some form of anti-immunity for the rest of my life. But that's a small price to pay for living a life. But getting back to SAYAH and to health literacy, I had to learn how to, I would be lying in bed and an RN would come in and say, we're going to give, they were really good, by the way, at Columbia Presbyterian about saying, we're going to give you this thing and this helps your buppity buppity bup. And it'd be some biological term. And I would have to stop them and say, well, what does that really mean? Helping my buppity bup. It's like, oh, well, that's for your white blood cell count. Okay, good. Thank you for that. And this one is for your da 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 da. What is that? Oh, that's for your, that's going to help your heart grow stronger because it helps with your blood flow or something like that. So we're all, I don't know about you, but I was raised as a kid in the 70s to listen to the doctor. Yeah, and we should listen to doctors. As I pointed out earlier, most of them are very, very well educated and have devoted years and a lot of expense toward that education. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't ask questions. And it doesn't mean that we're rude in asking questions or trying to second guess our healthcare professionals. What it means is we don't understand something. And it's really good if you can understand what you're about to do or what that pill means that you're about to put into your mouth. There's no harm in asking questions.
And another aspect of this, I trust Helene would be in agreement. You remember when we were kids and they said, you know, anytime you go swimming, take a buddy. You never go by yourself.
Sure.
I've found, and Agnes goes with me, and I was in the room with Agnes today, having a buddy in the examining room is a tremendous help simply because they don't mean to overwhelm you, but it is easy to be overwhelmed.
Oh, sure. Sure. You need an advocate. It's very important to feel like you're not alone. And, you know, I have the best advocate I could ever imagine for my life with Helene next to me. Again, the co-founder of a health literacy organization and somebody who by nature is a person who is not afraid to ask follow-up questions, who is not afraid to, if something doesn't seem right to her, to not just accept it that, oh, maybe they know more than I do, but to keep sort of, you know, pecking away at it a little bit. Again, not to argue or fight with a doctor, but just to, are we all on the same page? Are we all understanding and in agreement of what the problem is here and how we solve that problem, how we help deal with it?
Well, I want you to know that you're helping right now, because a dear friend of the program who has been a member of this community almost probably from the very beginning is in the chat room right now. And he said, I just came in, and this caller is relevant to me. And we told him who you are. And he went on to say, I had a quintuple bypass in October, and that this conversation is beneficial.
Great. What's that? Do you mind if I ask that person's
name? No, that's Richard. That's Richard.
Richard, thank you for saying that. It's very important for me to hear that stuff, to not just think that I'm going off yelling into the cavern and you know, let's pay it forward, you know, without being annoying. Let's all try to sort of pass on those ideas that, you have to take care of yourself. But, and one way of taking care of yourself is to be your own advocate or to have a very strong person with you, like Agnes for Bob or Helene for me, who can help us through these very overwhelming times and make sure that the questions need to get asked. I mean, look, you know, I've spent a lifetime doing bad things to my own health. You know, I did used to drink a lot when I was in my 20s. I stopped that by the time I was in my 30s. I never used to look at labels of food. You know, that was, if I wanted to eat something, I ate it. And I didn't even wash my hands half the time when I used to use the bathroom, whatever. I did a lot of not good things. I'm still here. But now I do know that, before I pour a bowl of something flakes and pour milk on it, I look at the labels. How much sugar does it have? How much salt does it have? When I go down the aisles of a pharmacy, I do look at what I'm taking, just from the, you know, over,
you and I share that. I'm a big, big label reader. And if I can encourage people to read labels in the grocery store, you know, it's seconds, but once you know what it is, things will leap off labels at you. For instance, I mentioned my pancreas. Mm-hmm. I found out something, and it's one of those corporate America things, Dan. I found out about something called high fructose corn syrup.
Yep.
And they use it in place of sugar. Mm-hmm. But high fructose corn syrup, no matter how many lobby groups and industry spokespeople say it, it is not sugar. Because if it was sugar, you'd be able to buy a bag or a bottle of it on the grocery store shelf. Guess what? You can't. And while demon sugar, and it is, you know, white cane sugar, brown sugar for that matter, that's just white sugar with molasses added to it. Oh, thanks. Mm-hmm. You know, you want some fentanyl with your heroin? That it processes through the gut like food is supposed to. You know, if we were meant to take things in through our pores, we'd do that. Or if we were supposed, but no, here's the trick on high fructose corn syrup. It metabolizes through the liver just like booze.
Mm.
And contributes to, the massive explosion in diabetes, and this is one, it's anecdotal, and association is not causation. We know all those things. But I was finishing up, and you, I know you remember this. I was finishing up at WVU in 1985 when the Coca-Cola Corporation introduced New Coke.
New Coke, yep.
And the big thing about New Coke was it, A, sucked, and B, because Coke was at war with its independent bottlers, they required the independent bottlers to use sugar, while the Coke bottling plants that were owned by Coca-Cola International transitioned to high fructose corn syrup so that they could leverage the independent bottlers out of business because the price differential was that profound.
I had no idea about this. I thought it was just about a rivalry with Pepsi and the fact that Pepsi was using Michael Jackson and Madonna in their commercials.
Well, they made it Pepsi-flavored Coke. It absolutely
was. That's exactly what it was.
But the thing is, go to the store. Not that you would ever do this now. See, try to buy a new Coke. It doesn't exist. It was disappeared a short time later and replaced with Coca-Cola Classic.
Classic.
Which, again, had high fructose corn syrup in it. And the next thing you know, high fructose corn syrup is in everything. I mean, it's in spaghetti sauce, for Christ's sakes. Okay? There began a few years ago to be a backlash against it, so that now when you're in the grocery store, you'll see things that are labeled no HFCS.
High fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, and I became a zealot about it. I would not allow it in the house.
Mm.
Because the other thing that it does is that there is an associational relationship between pancreatic disease and high fructose corn syrup, says the guy who drank enough to sink a battleship, or float one rather, who drank enough high fructose corn syrup between 1985 and, say, 2000, you know, to float a battleship or to damage a pancreas.
Well, you were being a typical American. I mean, Americans love soda. They love their high. We love things sweet. We love things salty. They taste great.
Salted caramel is the perfect marriage of that. Well,
I did not realize how salty America was until I was told you can't have that much. You know, limit it to whatever it is, 3 grams a day or something. And then it really, when you can't have it anymore, you realize it's in everything. It's in cereal. They put salt in cereal because the salt makes the high fructose corn syrup taste sweeter. It's a contrast thing.
Now, this may not be southern. This may be too southern for you, but there's nothing quite like the sweetness of a freshly cut watermelon in summer.
Well, we have watermelon everywhere. Yeah, it's
perfect. But down.
I thought you were going to go sweet tea for a minute. But okay, let's go on.
Down south, when you cut the watermelon open, there's always a salt shaker on the table.
Yeah, that was a Pittsburgh thing. My grandpa did that too. Or I don't know if it's a Pittsburgh thing, but he was very Pittsburgh. My grandpa, he did that. Salt on the cantaloupe, salt on the watermelon.
And it lights. And then there's, you know, you go back to my dad was an old salt, an old Navy man. And when he poured a beer, he had a salt shaker.
Well, that is one of my earliest memories of having moved to West Virginia. We moved in 1970 when I was 6 years old from the Pittsburgh area to Middleburn, and which is in Tyler County. And I was entering first grade. It was a perfect time, I guess, to move. But it really surprised me sitting down at school lunch and watching kids just dump salt on their food. I'd never seen anything like that, that everything got salt. Oatmeal got salt on it, and everything it still kind of flabbergasts me
one of the things that you touched on a few minutes ago, and we sort of breezed right by it, but I made a mental note, Dan. You mentioned mental health,
right?
And there are, I know that there are mental health aspects that run as sequelae to major surgery, whether it be heart surgery or any other forms. There's something that happens with the chemicals that are emitted by your brain and run through your body, and there can be post-surgical depression, post-surgical mental health changes. And I mention that because another dear friend of the program, Barkway, just wrote Hospitals and Mental Health. You should see what happens to dual diagnosis drug addicts who have mental health issues when they're released from rehab after only 2 weeks to 30 days, depending on insurance, if there's even a facility in their area that takes their insurance or that they can afford. Barkway continues, it's unconscionable how we treat addicts in this country. Not only marginalized by society, but then the insurance healthcare system, such as it is, does not help break the cycle of addiction, nor does it treat the mental health or chronic pain that drove them to use in the first place. Those suffering the disease of addiction cycle in and out of rehabs and prisons because we just don't have a system to treat them affordably and effectively. And all of that is very well taken, Dan, and consider, if you will, one of those states that is, the state that has the highest number of uninsured people in America, Texas, the number one delivery vehicle for mental health in Texas is the Texas penal system.
For mental health.
For mental health.
Overall population.
Mm-hmm.
That is wrong in more ways than I could ever count.
And here in West Virginia, this is a very real thing. The opioid crisis has done what it has done. And so in a market economy, the market responds to demand, right? I mean, that's what they teach in Econ 101. Well, the demand in this state is it's probably worse in West Virginia than in Florida where Barkway is, and it's bad there. But because of what the opioid crisis has done here, our mental health system has been intentionally or a combination of the two, retooled to deal with opioid addiction. Now, it's still...
Well, that's the number one scourge,
yeah,
right? That's...
Right, it is. It's still wildly insufficient, but that leaves you in a position where people who come into work in the system have an expertise in addiction treatment, and that means you wind up with a dearth of people who are qualified to deal with other more, dare I say it, garden variety forms of mental health issues, whether it be schizoaffective disorder or whether it be clinical depression, ADHD, anything else but addiction. And that makes it, and that means that another segment of society goes begging and hangs fire because the system itself is capable only of responding to crisis pressures instead of responding to predictable, statistically predictable pressures. Which sort of brings us in to the, back to the idea of what do we mean when we talk about universal health care? You know,
well, let me just interrupt, because you said a lot of things, and while I was listening, I thought of a lot of things. So I'll try to think of just a few of the things I was thinking. And one is that I, you know, way back when you were, even before I came on, you were discussing Finland, and that there not only are their healthcare statistics excellent, but just the overall quality of life. They're one of what, the top three happiest nations in the world. I can only speculate. Again, I don't know. I've never been to Finland. I don't know if I ever will. I don't know any Finnish people, native. But
you're talking to two or three right now. So,
oh, okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel like I've just gotten off the "It's a Small World After All" ride at Disneyland. But where I was going is that I can only speculate that perhaps their approach to healthcare isn't just like, oh, you got a cut, here's a Band-Aid, we're going to deal with the cut. Or, oh, you're addicted to a drug, here, we're going to put you in a place for 2 weeks to, quote-unquote, cure that addiction. It's the overall, I hate to use this term because it makes it sound like something that I'm not really necessarily a prophet of, which is a more holistic approach. The idea that the entire, everything is connected. That if you, and that goes to economics. Why are states like West Virginia or other states, why is the opioid addiction rate so high? Well, it's one thing is quite obvious, and it has been for a long, long time, is that there are limited economic opportunities for young people out of high school or out of college or any people in West Virginia. There are limited economic opportunities. So if you have all this time on your hands, it's not good. I know that I personally feel a lot better about myself when I've got a job to go to every day, and when I get a paycheck at the end of the week that's an adequate paycheck, that I can cover my bills, I can pay for my mortgage because of that paycheck. If I don't have that luxury, if I don't even have a job itself, I'm not going to be doing well. I'm going to be down on myself. I'm going to be depressed. I'm going to be bored, and I'm going to be poor. I'm not going to be able to pay bills, which is going to create a high level of anxiety. They're going to take my car away. They're going to turn off my lights. So there gets to be a certain point where how do you deal with it? Maybe you don't even deal with it at all. Maybe do the opposite. I'm going to escape from it. I could escape from it from less harmful ways, such as I'm going to just watch Netflix all day, or I'm going to go into extreme sports or something like that. I'm going to run marathons, and even though I can't pay my bills, well, I don't know. But, you know, in my earlier days, we used to escape. Everybody's escaped throughout centuries. My generation escaped by alcohol and marijuana, basically. I mean, there were kids that took other things, but it wasn't nearly as widespread as it seems to be now. So the stakes have raised. It's the idea that heroin is something that is taken by a notable percentage of a population. It just boggles my mind. I mean, heroin is the thing that we used to see in 1970s movies. It was a thing that people were doing in Times Square, you know. And I'll be blunt. You know, drugs like heroin and opioids, they were always considered sort of drugs for the poor black ghetto people. And the idea that marijuana and you know, that was more of like a white hippie cool person drug. And, you know, I've always said, too, maybe the one reason that we call the opioid and heroin problems epidemics now is because they're happening to white people.
And then that, you know, you're not the only one wondering about that. The late Tony Bourdain remarked upon it because he was a recovering addict.
Oh, that's right.
And
that's right.
Members, you know, activists within the African American community have said the same thing, because even in the history of West of coal mining in Appalachia, in the bad old days of the coal camps, there was little law enforcement to begin with, but there was, and it is sick to describe it this way, but the white coal company owners would look the other way about prostitution and heroin and cocaine and marijuana in the African American portions of the coal camp, because the racist attitude that went with it is that's just how those people are.
Well, they say it in The Godfather too. You know, when they
I love those films, but that is one of that without a doubt. That is one of the most sickening passages. You know, they let them kill themselves. They have no souls.
Yeah, yeah. But again, now that it's happening to poor white kids, kids who look like us, it's at least being paid attention to. I can't say it's being dealt with. It certainly doesn't seem to be. But people are at least paying attention.
And
that's not fair for me to say it's not being dealt with. I'm sure there are many people devoting a lot of money and a lot of time to trying. It's just like trying to deal with an earthquake or dealing with a typhoon.
But the other thing that you're tapping into, and we haven't had time to be frivolous yet, and I'm worried about that.
No, I think anybody that tuned in for frivolity, I'm sorry to say that we've got 20 minutes left, and I can't see making a left turn from this into talking about Game of Thrones upcoming new season. I think we're going to have to wait. I like to come on once a month, and you don't seem to mind it. So I guess April.
Not mind it. I welcome it. I look forward to it. Are you kidding me?
Well, yeah. I try not to come over too many times.
No, don't damn yourself with faint praise.
Okay, but anyway, let's get back to the subject.
The place that you were going in a direction that I think is one of the most fundamental philosophical or political questions that attends the whole matter of healthcare in this country. And it goes to the very essence of who we are as a country. And that is it is the current topic of debate between capitalism and socialism. Now, as I have said, I recognize, and in certain corners, Dan, of the so-called left, what left? This is going to be heretical for me to say, but I recognize that capitalism can and does do good things. The example I've used is, I don't want, and with the Boeing thing going on now, this is not as good an example as it used to be. Is, you know, I don't want a hippie collective building airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be a lot of capital in there, and there needs to be a lot of dedication to keeping people from falling 40,000 feet to their flaming deaths.
Yeah, I mean, it's one.
So
thing to
that
have
example
organic,
doesn't work so well.
Lettuce or something. Yeah, no, but I know what you're saying. And again, this connects to the thing of I want smart people in America. I want people that really know how to build a really great airplane and know how to develop that airplane to be even greater. And to also pay attention to what, let's say, the Japanese or the Finnish or the Soviets might be doing, or the Russians, I should say, are doing with their airplanes. And if they've got something that works, let's steal that idea and let's use it ourselves to make better airplanes for ourselves.
On the other hand, however, there is the question of, I think it has to begin with this. And this goes all the way back to Nikki Haley saying, well, yeah, it's too expensive, but I don't want to birth no $60 baby. Well, it's 60 bucks in Finland because people pay into a common pool that makes
That's right.
it less for everybody. And that is a socialistic notion. That is never something if you went digging around with a magnifying glass, you might actually find something that resembles it in Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. Because Adam Smith was actually a progressive thinker in 1776.
I'm impressed that you not only read this, but you can cite it, because I haven't a clue. Go ahead.
Because there is an element of, in the way Adam Smith proposes capitalism, there is an element of shared risk. The people who have the most at risk stand to make the greatest reward, but the people who have less at risk also stand to make some kind of reward. I'm
chewing on that. Go ahead.
And so when we haven't dropped a lot of F-bombs tonight, but I'm going. So when
I did a few.
So when some CEO fucks up his company royally, and everybody who had stock in the company is all of a sudden dead ass broke, but he walks away with a $10 billion golden parachute, Adam Smith would have a shit hemorrhage at that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's capitalism as we've come to understand it. or, you know, coal companies that go bankrupt and cancel out their employees' pensions and retirements and health care benefits, but then turn around and get permission from the bankruptcy court to pay a retention bonus of millions of dollars to all the executives who wouldn't know how to light a lump of coal if their lives depended on it in freezing weather. Hmm. So the larger conversation is it okay, and I say it is, to locate and isolate those parts of the economy where the profit motive has no business, where worrying about whether some CEO can buy a gold-plated bathtub with his Christmas bonus should not be part of the calculation.
And that's a lot to chew on, and we've only got 15 minutes.
But I would submit to you that clean water and clean air and health care are places where that the profit motive, the capitalist motive, does not belong. This doesn't mean workers of the world unite and we're going to march the Romanovs in front of the goddamn wall. Or in this case, anybody else with that kind of, you know, ruling power. It means that we're going to isolate these places, these instances, and we are going because the corporate good is always profit. A corporate charter says that a corporation is established to make a profit doing A, B, C, D, E. But in those realms, we should be able to say the public good is going to be the prime directive. In
you
this
mean the
instance.
General welfare, for instance?
Why, looky there, yes, it would. It's
promoting
actually...
Yes,
yeah. Right, exactly.
Well, you know, I believe in capitalism, which sounds to me like the first line of The Godfather, which is I believe in America. But I do believe in capitalism. If I didn't, I mean, you know, I've been getting up early for work pretty much every day of my adult life and devoting, in my case, easily over 8 hours a day, more often than not, 12 to 14 of them. And I will keep doing that for probably the next 10 years. And then hopefully there will still be a Social Security system in place for me to retire off of. But I do. But also I was raised probably idealistically. I grew up with the idea that it's a good thing to have a job and to go into the job every day and to have a check. And with that check, you're going to be able to take care of your families. And this is where the idealism comes in, that everybody's – that it's a game that we're all going to more or less play fair with that game because we know that it benefits all of us. And that isn't socialism. That's capitalism at its most idealistic form, that, yeah, the CEO is going to get paid more than the guy working on the assembly line because, you know, the CEO is in charge of those guys on the assembly line. And I know from being a boss, being a head of a department, for example, being a prop master versus being a guy who shows up to day play on a set and doesn't know a whole lot of what the situation is, it is harder to be a boss. There's a lot of stress that comes with being a boss, and you're responsible. When things go wrong, you're the one that gets yelled at. You know, you're the one that gets fired very often, very publicly. So there is something to be said for it's like the more responsibility you take on, yeah, the more you get paid. And also the thing when people say like, well, I don't understand how come those athletes get paid all that money when teachers don't get paid. Well, it's because they participate in something that creates a lot of income. And so they should be able to share in that income to some degree or another. I mean,
right.
If you're going to sell a t-shirt, if you're going to sell a shirt with, you know, Brady on the back and Tom Brady's number and all of that, you know, at least some of the profit from that shirt should go to Tom Brady. So I do believe that there is an ideal world in my head that probably has never existed, but certainly doesn't now, where capitalism is a system where people more or less play by the rules, and we all get to live acceptably, adequately enough by playing by those rules.
Well,
I don't
exactly,
know what brings it back to a more fair and equitable system.
And when we go back to that $60 birth compared to that $12,000 birth, Dan. Part of the reason for that gap is not simply because doctors are more expensive in the United States, but rather because, since we're playing around with the Godfather tonight, it's because there are so many people in the system who just want to wet their beaks.
Right.
And so the CEO of the insurance company, well, he doesn't dampen his beak. He gets it sopping wet. And Finland, since we're using Finland, by the way, number one on the list of 156 countries, this courtesy of Glenn in San Diego, in terms of overall happiness, variables including income, freedom, trust, healthy life expectancy, and more. The U.S., you know, we're 19th. We're 19th. USA. USA.
Right.
But part of that is that the Finns are not paying people who aren't doing anything for people's well-being.
Yeah, if you want to benefit by the system, you should put into the system.
We all have
a minimum to chip into it.
There's no value added to a healthcare system by a CEO who needs a 14th summer home in Vail.
No.
They are within, you know, within a sort of broader social. Yeah, when a beehive starts going south, guess who goes first? The drones. Because they don't do anything in the first place.
Yeah, it's crazy that you know, I'm going to keep referring to my idealistic, nostalgic childhood past. I remember the idea of being a millionaire was something that people aspired toward, and now a million just seems like chump change. Billionaire is where it's at, and even that, how many billions do you have to have before you're part of the elite circle of well-respected, revered billionaires? I don't know. Because I always feel the pressure of time, it seems much less than you, and I see by my clock we've got 9 minutes. I just wanted to bring it back around, if I could, to the personal, and in
Please.
My case, yeah, because, you know, not to overplay the sick guy card, but yeah, I had a heart surgery. I have a literal 25-year-old's heart in my 55-year-old body. So I just wanted to, again, use my time here to promote a few things, one of which is, as I had said earlier, my wife's organization, say-ah.org, which, you know, what that does with health literacy in general, and say-ah is part of that, is this idea that the more informed you are, the more powerful you are, the more power you have over your own fate. A lot of times when I talk with you on this show or I talk with my friends about things, quote unquote, political, there's always a feeling of helplessness to it. Like, we know that there are problems. We know that dumping shit into a river is not good for anybody's health. But you're working hard with the ACHE Act. I know that. But so often we feel like we can't really do anything other than complain about it or post about it. But if nothing else, think of your own healthcare as a political act. If you teach yourself, if you help form a better system of dealing with healthcare professionals, of dealing with the insurance companies, you know, to understand what the benefits and risks are to treatments, to meds, what the side effects could be, to dare to ask those questions, you're taking charge of your own health. And a healthy you is a very important part of American life. We need healthy American citizens. And hopefully on, who believe the things we do that can then help change all of the other things we hate going on in terms of immigration or foreign policy or budget cuts and so forth. So the personal is the political is I guess where I want to go with it. And then, you know, from there, sure, you know, let's keep trying to work for things like like when we know things are environmental catastrophes, like mountaintop removal or the deregulation of environmental standards. We know these are shitty for us, and we even really know that they don't create jobs. I can't imagine anybody by now really believes that they create jobs. They don't. They just line the pockets. But I also want to just get one more plug in too, which is, again, and for me it's a personal issue, which is organ donorship.
Absolutely. I was. If you hadn't done that, I was gonna.
Yeah. The past couple of times, I'll always plug it and always try to sell it to you. If you haven't signed that part on your driver's license, if your state offers that, if you're not an Ogendorner, Ogendorner. No, that's a Finnish person.
Happens.
I think Swedish. I'm Mr. Ogendorker. No, if you're not an organ donor, you can be. It doesn't matter what age you are. There's still, as long as you're not dead, there's still time to sign up. It's super easy. I've gone to a few websites. Just Google in how to be an organ donor, and you will see that it's a matter of minutes to make this decision. And why you should is because I'm here, and I'm talking to you. I wouldn't be here nor talking to you if I hadn't received somebody's heart. If that person weren't so heroic and so unselfish. You know, we keep coming back to this selfishness. I'm going to just say it, and you may disagree. I personally think it's selfish to take your organs and with you
and set fire to them.
What's that?
Yeah, take your organs and set fire to them.
Yeah, you might as well. It's not any less wasteful than putting them in a hole and sticking your name on a piece of concrete on top of it. At the very least, give us your organs. If you can, give us the whole damn body, because what are you really going to do with it? It's going to save somebody's life, and you'll never know. You'll never know what a hero you were. I mean, maybe you'll know if you believe in a heaven, and if you are so blessed to actually go there, maybe you will know.
Yeah, but if you sign up now, you know before you. Hey, wow, get hold of the organ donor people. I just came up with a slogan.
Yeah.
Know before you go. Know that you have saved a life. Know that you have increased the quantum of good on this little planet before you even go.
You know what I'll do the next time I do one of my heart healthy walks in the mall. I'll bring a clipboard with me, and I'll try to do an informal survey of mall customers to see what they think about know before you go. They might think it has something to do with incontinence.
Well, I was thinking about that, or maybe, yeah. But in the proper context, it might work. And
it could work.
And let me also say, Dan, that, you know, I don't just when the program's going on here, just because it's not on video doesn't mean that I'm not paying attention. I don't. When you're talking, I'm not sitting here playing like, you know, online canasta.
No, I know.
I've
listened to your show enough. I've started to get used to the patented Bob Kincaid pauses.
Yes, and that's patent pending, along with the word adequate.
Well, I understand there was a lawsuit with who was that guy in the 70s? Paul. I don't know.
Harvey.
Harvey.
Day.
Yes, yeah. I'm Paul.
Yeah, his estate has been after me for ages now.
Yes.
The minute when you first mentioned it, I went to say-a.org, and yes. There and I can give testimony. There is a wealth of information there that will make you a better patient. I know it sounds crazy to say that you need to be a good patient, but it's absolutely true. I've worked with people over the years in the legal context. And explain to them, you hire the lawyer to do what the lawyer does, but the lawyer will be ever so much better of a lawyer if you learn how to be a client.
I did not realize until I was put into a hospital how much work being a patient is. It's a shitload of work. I mean, I thought I'm just going to lie there in a bed all day and doctors will come in and do things. You have to be involved. And if you're going to be involved, you might as well know what's going on.
You have to be plugged into your own body and able to communicate. You know, that's one of the things that makes, for instance, pediatrics so challenging. The doc can't look at the baby and say, how do you feel?
And listen, the difference between me coming out of the hospital and celebrating a half-iversary and me living to an age old enough to be able to see the grandchildren I might have someday is so much based on myself and not on my doctors. I am the one that has to go up in a few minutes and take certain pills. I take them at 9 a.m., 1 p.m., 5 p.m., and 9 p.m. So in 3 minutes or so, it's my time for that. And if I have to know how to organize those pills. I have to understand what they do and why they're important. And I have to take them without fail four times a day.
Absolutely.
If I don't do that, I'm not going to see my grandchildren. I want to. You know, I might have grandchildren and never know them because I'll be dead.
You know, I do with that schedule you just gave me there, and I won't keep you away from your dose. But
no,
I really wish, for the sake of irony, if nothing else,
I won't die immediately. But I won't die on your show, as far as I.
Thank you. But I really wish, for the sake of irony, if nothing else, you could have worked it out so it was like a Dr. Pepper bottle, and you know, 10, 2, and 4, and you're done. But I understand the exigencies of modern science, so yeah, that.
I don't understand the word exigency, so that's good. But I'm a theater major. What do you expect of me? So that's all the
yeah. But you know, you're Shakespeare, plus. And you by God know what a moiety is.
A moiety? I know what a moil is, because I'm married to a Jewish woman. A moiety? It's been a while.
You can't open a Shakespeare play without him dumping a wheelbarrow full of moieties on you. But no, the fact of the matter is, yeah, I do hear that. The fact of the matter is, yeah. I don't know what a moiety is either. But Dan, I do know that I have enjoyed, as I always do, this conversation.
Sure, and next time we'll be fun and frivolous. We'll do something that is not so, you know, life and death literally, as this perhaps, unless Trump does something that, you know, blows us all up. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'll see you in about a month, and if anybody's disappointed that we weren't as funny as usual, we'll try to be funnier next time.
And you know what? In a month from now, Dan, you can probably give us a little bit. Maybe by then, you can give us a little bit more of a skinny on what you're working on.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk about it. It's an Apple TV show, and Apple really puts the clamps on what their content is. And I respect that. They pay a lot of money, and they pay me some of that money. So my lips are sealed.
But at least until it's publicly released, right?
Yeah, that's right. And listen, thank you for always welcoming me on this. It does me a world of good health wise. I feel so much better. You're a free therapist, I guess, in a way for me. But I always come out of these feeling like $1 million, and it's something
I'm so glad
to doing.
I'm so glad.
And listen, if you ever wanted to do a Johnny Carson and take a night off, let me know and I'll be your Doc Severinsen.
Yeah, all right. You take care, Dan Fisher. Thank you so very much. And give if Helene is listening still, thank you for sharing Dan with us for a couple of hours, Helene. And it was a pleasure. And I hope we'll get to talk sometime too.
Okay. Love to you and love to Agnes and love to all of your listeners. Thank you for the emails. I love you guys.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Take your pills. And that is, let's see, I've described irrepressible, incomparable. Let's go with a Latin flavor. That is Dan Fisher, sui generis. How's that? Mm-hmm. If Dan's still connected, he's probably looking it up even. Well, no, he's taking his pills. Then he'll look it up, along with moieties. So here we are at the end of the program. Thorn in the Side Thursday has been a dandy. If given that I had to miss an evening yesterday, it was nice to come back with such a wonderful conversation. Thanks, by the way, so very much to Chris in Germany, and thanks to Tracy for the nobody should have to be gone overnight for a to go to the doctor challenge. We will. Tracy's got met by the sorority of Leans. We still have $90 to go on Chris's challenge. If folks in the overnight crew would attend to that, I would be immensely thankful. And then tomorrow, if that happens, let's see. If Chris's challenge gets met overnight, we'll only have 310 to deal with tomorrow. So, crossing fingers. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to our subscribers and people who kick in along the way and through the course of the day. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks earlier in the evening to Steve from Georgistan and Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years leading the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.